Thanks, Steve. Hi, everybody. It's Bill and Wendy. It's Wednesday, and this is the show. It's the Wednesday version of our show. We're at 312-981-7200 if you'd like to chime in.
Get down on it.
Get down on it, as the kids say.
Well, I don't think they say that anymore.
I have many questions today, and question number one is this. I'm not involved in the stock market. I know that today is a huge day.
Historic.
It has surpassed the 20,000 mark for the first time in history.
What does that mean for you, Bill Leff?
What does that mean for me? Well, here's the question I have. I hear stock people on radio and on television always say the same thing, that the stock market loves stability, that the best thing in the world for stocks is stability. And yet right now it's the most unstable time. We don't know exactly which way we're headed in several different categories. And now is when the stock market is thriving more than ever. How can that be?
You know, I talk to those people every day, and I ask that same question all the time. Because
and what do they say?
Yeah,
to
what's
you?
The answer? Then?
Well, there can be a variety of ways to look at stability. Like, you know, but I agree with you. Nothing is ever stable. Even in the most stable times, nothing is stable.
Sure.
Right. So, you know, you can look at some of the. Construction and industry stocks rose right after the Trump election because he had promised this big package coming on infrastructure. So that's the reason. And if you've got that, there's a degree of stability there. Well, we know we're going to have that business.
Yeah.
You know, but I agree with you. When I hear stability and, you know, business loves stability, that doesn't ever really connect with me.
Don't understand. I know we live in a time where nothing really makes sense. I get that. I totally
We're
get that.
In the upside down world.
But yeah, it's the bizarro world. Mm-hmm. It's Superman's bizarro world. But with almost everybody in the stock game saying essentially what we're saying, which is if you want the market to be heading in the right direction, the key to all this is stability. And we have very little stability really in terms of knowing what's ahead in several different areas. I don't get it.
But with they're banking on the idea that the government regulation is going to ease, make it easier for business and things like that. The tax rate, the business tax rate, corporate rate might be dropping. So to your point, they're trading on something that they don't know is going to happen. They're,
on
you know,
a dream.
They're trading the rumor, right?
Yeah.
Or the promise.
Yeah.
Yes. My question is, and I haven't checked Donald Trump's Twitter account yet. I do follow him. So when he talks about all these people that are his fans, I'm just curious. That's why I follow him.
Mm-hmm.
Has he tweeted that, you know, for the first time ever, and look who's sitting in the big chair as this happens?
I've not seen anything like that. Have you, Steve? I've not seen him mention this yet.
Still working on the illegal voters?
The last thing he said was this morning when he's going to name the Supreme Court justice next week.
Oh, all right.
Can I just throw a question out there?
Uh-huh. You just did, baby.
I did. Because, really, and Trump fans, please call us, 312-981-7200. The election has been won. Does it matter?
Does
about
part
these,
matter?
You know, millions of undocumented voters that he thinks it's wrong and he now wants an investigation
well,
into
this
it?
This is the most upside down world, part of our upside down world, because he is. He is undermining an election he won.
Right.
Which just seems absolutely crazy to me. And please, Trump supporters, does this bother you?
But
I got to know this.
But I don't think he... It seems like he's trying to verify to everybody who says, oh, yeah, he won the Electoral College.
But not the
popular
vote
is what should... So to those people, he's saying... Yeah, well, maybe that popular vote isn't quite what you think it is because all these illegals voted and the votes went against me. So maybe, just maybe, I won both categories.
He's not saying maybe about that. I mean, his spokesman said yesterday it is a belief, a long-held belief he has had, that he would have won the popular vote had there not been all of the 3 to 5 million illegal voters.
A win's a win. What does it matter at this point? How can you be a sore winner?
Well, I think just because of his chemical makeup is such that it offends him that so many Americans are saying, oh, yeah, sure, Electoral College, but popular vote where it really counts, you didn't win. So he's saying, not so fast.
Yeah, well, or you could say, no, that's not where it really counts.
He could,
you know, where it really counts is the Electoral College, and I won, you know, handily with more than 300 votes.
Yeah.
How is he getting work done while he's focusing on these things?
Well, he's getting a lot done.
He is?
Yes.
And, you know, I think the best part of being president would be to have these breakfasts with people.
That's a nice perk.
You just get a really? Breakfast.
Well, that's...
I'll meet with you, sure. Let's call a breakfast.
Right.
Will there be French toast?
There will be French toast. There may be a McMuffin.
Omelet station?
Yeah. Oh, there's always an omelet station.
I took my kids to... Well, no, never mind.
I love when Bertrand does that. It's the favorite part of my day.
You know what? Because it was going to sound political, and I didn't mean I was going to, you know, say I took him to a Disney breakfast, and I had a character in mind, and I didn't... People would have made an association.
No.
No, really, I didn't mean it that way, but...
It's just your train of thought.
The Donald Trump breakfast should be sold as character breakfasts?
I'm not saying anything, Bill. I said, wait a minute, I'm not going to say anything.
Can we talk to Tom, get you off the hook, Bertrand? Hi, Tom. How are you? Now, you are a Trump supporter, correct?
Yeah, I voted for him.
Okay.
I don't think it's a problem, you know, that he's undermining his election. He did win, and he's the president. What I'm thinking that he's going after is simply that he sees that there's a problem. It's illegal voting, and whether he won or lost, you know, it's a problem that ought to be corrected, because we as American citizens shouldn't stand whether you voted for Hillary Clinton or whether you voted for Donald Trump or Bernie Sanders. It doesn't matter. It's wrong. Illegal voting is wrong, and it should be looked into.
But if you're devoting that much time into looking into that, why wouldn't you also devote time into looking into how much Russian influence there was on the votes as well?
Maybe it is. I don't know. Yeah, just wait for the news cycle to pick it up. Maybe it'll come.
Can I ask you a question, Tom? And I'm not putting you on the spot, and you don't have to answer. Do you have any regrets at all for voting for Donald Trump?
I didn't want Trump. I wanted...
Not Hillary.
I didn't want Hillary, but I wanted Cruz. I voted for Cruz in the primary, but you know Trump's it, and I was going to support him. So, you know, because I like his policies better than Hillary's. You know, something's got to be done. Now he's shaking it up. Now would I have shook it up just exactly the same way? Maybe not. But something has to be done, people. This corruption constantly. You know, send them away for 10 or 20 years. Maybe that'll get their attention.
Well, perfect. Thank you for sharing. We appreciate it. And Godspeed. We're all in this together, Tom.
Yep, you're welcome.
Have a great day, Tom. All right, let's do this. More to discuss with you. Plenty of show ahead. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. All right, so this conversation started out with a discussion about how in these unstable times, the stock market seems to be flourishing. It's very strange to some of us who don't understand this. Actually, Steve understands the stock market, and it's just
it's
strange
troubling.
To him. And then somehow we have morphed into a conversation about Donald Trump, President Trump, and how with other things going on, he seems to be very focused right now on potential voter fraud, that some voters may not have been the U.S. citizens that they claim to be. And why is that so important?
And I threw the question out there to Trump supporters. Does it bother you that, in my opinion, it looks like he's being a sore winner?
Mm-hmm.
You know, a win's a win, especially when you win the presidency of the United States. Donald, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, as I told your screener, you know, one said that if everything in the world was the same, the world would never change. And I think what it is Mr. Trump is offering something totally outside of what we're used to. We're used to the career politician saying, oh, I promised to lower taxes. I promised this. I promised that. And a lot of times they don't deliver. So here's a guy that, I mean, he's bringing upheaval within his own organization, within the country, possibly might even eventually within the world. But, I mean, think about it. All of this haranguing that he's doing won him the election.
Yep.
Fair and square. And we just, whether he looks into this investigation of voter fraud and now, think about it. In past elections, it has been questionable and possibly even thought of then. Wasn't they going to even, the Obama administration even considering looking into the investigation of Russia interrupting into this? That's using taxpayer money to investigate that. So in essence, he wanted to do the same thing. So I think what it is, America just needs to embrace that, hey, we finally got an individual that doesn't say career politician, President Donald J. Trump.
You know, a lot of people didn't like Mitt Romney because he was he had a lot of money, and people said, you know, he's not going to relate to the everyman. Why is it different with Donald Trump, who also has a lot of money? Because he's not a politician?
I would have to. I would only have to personally believe that because, like I say, you normally hear a typical story from typical politicians. Hey, vote for me. Hey, I promise you, I'm gonna help you. This. Hey, I'm gonna create jobs. Hey, I'm gonna create import export. You hear the same thing all the time. I'm not necessarily hearing all of that, the typical stuff from Donald J. Trump, whether when he was campaigning or even within his first 5 days of getting the media all up in a hype. Look, everybody has a personal opinion.
Right.
He has his. Y'all have yours. I have mine, and I just feel that ultimately this is a guy that's trying to possibly change the world in a different way that we just can't grasp that concept. You know, it's like I told Matt, Matt Bubalik, I believe he is, one of your evening hosts.
Yes.
I invented a gun case, a multifunctional case that, you know, offers the use in many different markets. But what I have to do is I have to try to get commercialization and partnership with it. But the ultimate goal of what I have to do is convince people that, hey, you see my vision here? It is different than anything out there on the market. Would you please see my vision and spend your money and help me get this thing to the market? See, so I'm in essence trying to do the same exact thing as Donald J. Trump is. But the only thing is I got to talk politically nice, politically correct, in order, you know, trying to get these people to spend their money on my product and believe in how I believe in my product.
Can I tell you,
that's all Donald J. Trump is doing, is just trying to get people to believe.
And it's such a pleasure to talk to you, Donald, and have a conversation where we're not yelling at each other because, you know, not everyone's going to see eye to eye. Thank you so much for calling.
And you have a good day, ma'am.
I'm no ma'am.
He, right.
Makes me sound old.
If he would have waited another minute or two, I think he would have realized that. Wendy, here's the strange thing. What he said, what Donald just said about Donald Trump is definitely true, that he was offering a point of view that we hadn't seen. It was a non-politician running for the presidency, and that's not a bad thing.
Right.
The trade-off is, personality-wise, he's a little hard to swallow, you know? Just the brashness of his demeanor, the way he handles things. So
he is different.
On one side, if somebody came along that offered exactly what was just said, I'm a non-politician, but I've got a plan for what I want to do with the country, then I think that would have been a much easier pill to swallow. But just because of the way Donald Trump behaves himself or doesn't behave himself, that to many people, myself included, was a tremendous turnoff. Love the idea,
yeah,
but don't like the way
I don't like the
delivered.
Character yeah. of him. But I'll tell you this, if there was someone who had that idea and wasn't as outspoken and in the public spotlight so much, I don't think they ever would have won.
Probably not.
So there's that as well. I think we have time for one more, and let's talk to Dennis. Hi, Dennis.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Good, Dennis.
I think that all this focus on election fraud might be a precursor to coming out with a national voter ID card.
Yeah.
That contentious in a lot of states. Voter ID cards might be a way to stop all fraud.
Can I tell you something? Talking about the voter ID cards, you get it in the mail and you put it on a bulletin board or something in case you need it. But in the last several elections, I just give my name. I don't even think I had to show my license.
Really?
I can't even remember, but I wouldn't mind having to show my voter ID card.
You signed a sheet of paper.
I did do that, but
that's the
version of it.
Why wouldn't they need proof that it was me?
Well,
why?
You signed your voter registration card, and then when you go to vote,
they match it up.
They match
up the signature.
Yeah. Right.
I guess.
Well, what do you want? You want a state-issued ID? Because then there'll be frauds of those.
There's going to be frauds anywhere.
Part of the problem here, one of the issues, is this isn't a huge problem. You know, and the Democrats will say that all these voter ID laws are really meant to keep Democratic voters from voting.
Yeah.
We haven't seen in our recent history widespread voter fraud or elections impacted by voter fraud, unless this is one that, you know, the president says. But so in a way, a lot of these fixes are fixing a problem that doesn't exist. It works now for you, Wendy, to go and sign the sheet and have the election judge who's trained to match it match it and give you a ballot. That system's been working pretty well.
And if people are, I know that if you move from, you know, you register at one place and then you move and you re-register, I don't think those people are doing it years in advance in order to get three votes as opposed to one. They're just moving and they're only using one of their three available voting.
Right. I would imagine that's true. Yeah.
Well, Dennis, anything else you'd like to add to this?
I'm for voter IDs. Thanks.
It's not a bad idea. But as Steve pointed out, there will be ways to forge that.
That's true.
It's just not necessary right now. And there are people who don't have state-issued IDs who are registered to vote or legally vote or voteable who would have to go through that in getting it. And they're, in my view, and this is strictly my view, it's the problem that exists, if there is one, isn't such that it would require all those people to do those extra steps. I don't think there's a problem here.
But, Dennis, thank you for your opinion. I wouldn't mind showing my, you know, my voter ID card.
We should make it easier to vote, not harder to vote.
Right.
Again, that's my opinion.
And, Dennis, you have yours. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it.
Okay.
All right, let's do this. A break, some news, and
everybody's
then more show.
Been nice.
So far, everybody's been very nice. Stay here. It's a nice day, everybody. It's Bill and Wendy, and it's WGN.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. Thank you, Steve Bertrand. Let's talk video games for a minute, and let's combine it with what's going on in Chicago. In the studio with us right now is Michael Block. Michael is a lead programmer on this new video game that's called We Are Chicago. Welcome, Michael.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Now, We Are Chicago is basically portraying what's going on in Chicago right now with shootings and crime. Am I right in assuming that?
Yes. We're coming at this from kind of a more personal narratives perspective. So it's talking about kind of the people that live in these neighborhoods that have to kind of put up with the violence that's happening around them and don't necessarily get talked about as much in the news. You hear homicide statistics and stuff like that, but the actual experiences of day-to-day life kind of get lost in that. And so we're trying to bring those back up in this game and talk about kind of the struggles that people have dealing with these issues as they go about their daily lives.
So it takes the stance of this is a horrible situation. All the violence is terrible. It's not because, you know, as you know, some of the top-selling video games are the exact flip of that.
Right, exactly. Yeah, we're taking the opposite approach, and we're talking about kind of how these situations are affecting people, but, like, not in ways that they want, right? So they're trying to get a job, they're trying to go to school, they're trying to better themselves, and even if they make all the right choices, they end up in situations where they're getting shot at or getting mugged or things like that. So
it's a positive Grand Theft Auto. It's like the flip side of a Grand Theft Auto. Okay,
yeah, exactly.
Good.
Yeah.
Now, Michael, did you go into these areas and do research to come up with ideas for We Are Chicago?
Yeah. So we did a number of things. At the beginning of the project, we did interviews with people. So we did some on-the-street interviews, and we did some one-on-one interviews with people who grew up on the South Side. And then we also brought on a writer from Englewood to write all the dialogue for the game. So he kind of took all of those narrative or the interviews that we had done and figured out, you know, how to kind of construct that into an overall narrative arc and give the characters a little background and flesh everything out and make the narrative. So
did you find something that ran through all these neighborhoods, like maybe a lack of hope? Did that have anything to do with this?
Honestly, everybody was actually like very positive about the future when we were interviewing them and about the potential for a lot of these things to change and to get better. I think the big thing that we saw was a lot of people were really excited to share their stories that they didn't necessarily have the opportunity to talk about what was happening in a very real and personal way. And so the opportunity to share that story with a wider audience and to get people talking about it to hopefully, you know, inspire some change in that area, I think is something that people were very excited about.
Did you have to sell this idea to somebody? Because I know how the video game industry works.
Yeah.
They want to sell copies of the game. They're in it sadly, like all businesses, to make some money.
Right.
So did you have to physically sit down in somebody's office and sell them on this idea and why this is a good thing?
Yeah, so I was actually in a really fortunate position, and it's probably the only reason that this game got made, that my previous project had done really well as an independent project, and I had enough money to basically fund this entirely by myself.
Oh, wow.
So
that's been really great. But at the same time, we haven't really been thinking about necessarily how to monetize it. So that might be a fun wake-up call on February 9th when the game comes out. But we're kind of hoping that the interesting subject matter and kind of the importance of this discussion will drive a lot of people to get the game and make it sustainable so that we can continue to do things like this.
All right. Now, you said February 9th. That's when this becomes available for PC, Mac, and Linux, correct?
Yes. Yep.
What is the cost of this game?
So we're starting at $15. It'll be on a launch discount at 10% off. So
$15.
That's great.
Yeah, yeah.
Very affordable.
Yeah, yeah.
Very, very
But
affordable.
The key is, I guess, if it's less money, more people will buy it, and then the message gets out there to more people.
Yes, yes. One other thing that we're doing with this is we're partnered with two nonprofits in Chicago. So one of them is All Stars Project of Chicago, and the other is Reclaim Our Kids. And a portion of the proceeds from the game goes to help them. So we wanted to set it at a price that was affordable, but we didn't necessarily want to knock it down too low because we're doing this kind of rev share model, and we want them to be supported by this game as well. So.
Let's say I put my quarter in and the game is starting.
Yeah.
What happens at the very beginning? Where do we go at the very beginning?
Yeah, so the game is told through kind of conversation-driven mechanics. So if you think of it like a choose-your-own-adventure book, you have these choices in conversation and dialogue where you're having to decide how to respond to people, and those choices influence how they feel about you, and that changes how things play out in the story.
Yeah.
So at the beginning of the game, you're in school, and you're kind of getting introduced to your friends, and somebody comes up and basically says, hey, you have to represent for this gang, and if you don't, like, they make some veiled threats about what will happen to you.
Yeah.
And so you have to kind of make these choices right away and decide how to handle yourself in this situation, knowing that there might be consequences later.
Kind of a weird concept when you think about it, because a lot of times when kids or adults play video games, they suspend belief and know this isn't real.
Right.
This is way different. This is real. This is happening right here, right now.
Yeah, yeah. And we're thinking, I mean, as we've done some playtests and taken it to conventions and things like that, people do mention, like, hey, it's really strange that this is a real thing that's happening. It kind of gives those questions more weight. It makes you think about it more than you might necessarily do if it was a fictional story.
Mm-hmm.
So we think it's a very powerful way to kind of have a discussion about this subject. But yeah, it's definitely a change from traditional games.
Is anybody in the storyline based on real people that we might know, or is it all just abstract and kind of sketch versions of a bunch of different people?
Yes, is Rahm Emanuel in it?
No.
No?
No, we don't.
I'd like to see him in cartoon form, wouldn't you?
We don't have any famous people featured in the game. It's all based on the interviews that we did. And the people that we interviewed, some of them were like musicians that are like famous in their neighborhoods to some degree, but not necessarily you know, people that everyone around the country would necessarily recognize.
Okay.
Yeah. All right, this might be a tough question to answer. The neighborhoods that you speak of that are featured in We Are Chicago don't have a very good relationship with the police.
Sure.
Is that shown in the video game at all?
So what we're talking about kind of the opportunities and the lack of opportunities that kind of lead people to go out and shoot somebody or join a gang, things like that. We don't specifically feature a lot of stuff about the police. They are brought up a couple of times in the conversations and they talk about some of that dynamic. But the focus that we really wanted to have was on kind of these social issues that are leading people to make these choices. Because I think that's kind of the part that gets lost in all this. So you hear Donald Trump talking about law and order and you hear those kinds of things being said all the time. People talking about sending in the feds and all that, right? But the underlying issues that are kind of creating this violence on the South Side aren't being addressed. The issues of education access and job opportunities and things like that. And I don't think any of that stuff is going to go away until you start addressing some of those other issues.
And a lot of people aren't really aware of that. It's just people shooting people. You know, how can they do that?
Right.
There are reasons that that happens.
Right,
and it sounds like you're exploring that. And We Are Chicago. It's a video game that... It drops. It becomes available February 9th.
Say, yeah, that's what the kids are saying.
For PC, Mac, Linux, where do we get this? Where do we go to get this game?
So you can go to our website, wearechicagogame.com, and you can actually pre-order it right now. But then there will be links to the store page as well so that on February 9th you can get it.
I know that there's certainly a backdrop of violence to the storyline of this game, but is there actual violence in the game itself, or is it just kind of used as a... in the background sort of thing?
Yeah, so there are violent scenarios that happen that you're a part of, and you have to kind of figure out how to mitigate some of that and get out of it. But another thing too that we're trying to bring up in the game is there are a lot of positive things that are happening in these neighborhoods, and we want to talk about those as well. So there's a lot of scenes where we kind of counterbalance that violence with, you know, hanging out with your family and having this very, like, you know, familial, normal sort of setting and having discussions through that. And the poetry slam is a big part of the game, where a lot of the kids that we talk to, they do poetry, they do rap, they do all these sorts of things that are very creative endeavors to kind of express themselves and talk about their situation. And we wanted to bring that into the game and talk about it, to bring some of the positive back in so that it's not all doom and gloom and, sure. and everything's terrible all the time. Yeah.
$15. If you pre-order it, there is 10% off if you do that now.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. And again, you've teamed up with a couple of not-for-profits, so it's only $15 to get this video game called We Are Chicago. Tells the story of some of the unfortunate lives that some people are living. It will make us aware. And who are the not-for-profits that you're teaming up with again?
It's All Stars Project of Chicago and Reclaim Our Kids.
I know there's a rating system on video games. Yeah. Do you guys submit to that? Are you rated?
Yes.
And what's your rating on this?
We're a teen rating.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's teen for violence and some swearing and things like that.
Okay.
But, yeah.
This is really a great idea. When we first heard about it, we didn't know what to think about it because is it like focusing on Chicago's bad spots to sell video games,
right.
but you're doing things to try and help. Did
exactly.
you spend your whole life playing video games as a kid? I mean,
I played a lot of video games as a kid. Yeah. Yeah. And I think really I was working in more entertainment focused games for a while. And I've always kind of wanted to have a bigger impact through games. It just, again, selling it to a publisher, trying to convince somebody with money that this is a good idea is really hard because they don't necessarily see how they're going to be able to stay sustainable.
Yeah.
And that sort of thing. So I think that's the big key.
Michael, I mentioned earlier Grand Theft Auto, which is one of the more well-known game series. Do you think that contributes at all to a kid who, you know, comes home from school and is playing a game like that where he's shooting people and stealing cars all day? Do you think that has anything to do with him being a violent person later on because he's playing those games?
I've seen a lot of psych studies. I did a bit of research into this previously, and generally people have found that it does have an impact on people's behavior and attitudes and that sort of thing, but not in the way of like they're going to go out and commit crimes and steal cars. Grand Theft Auto sells millions and millions of copies. If that was the case, we would have millions and millions of people being car thieves and all that. So I don't think it's necessarily a direct correlation. I do think there are influences. And I think one of the things that we wanted to do with our game was to kind of take that influence and take that weight that the games have to influence people and do it towards something positive.
Although when I was a kid, Michael, I played Frogger all the time. Yeah. And you should see me after the show when I have to cross Michigan Avenue. Yeah. I do the same moves.
That's fair.
I like to see when you get hit by a car. Yeah. A big splash.
I splat on the ground. It's crazy.
Congratulations. This really seems like a noble effort to give a fun game out there and teach some of us a little bit more about what's going on. We Are Chicago. It's available for PC, Mac, and Linux, and it's available at wearechicagogame.com on February 9th. If you pre-order the game right now, you can get 10% off before the game is out. Thank you so much and continued success.
Thanks for having me.
Take care, Michael. A quick break, then some more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right, Bill. We had Michael Block on, a lead programmer on the new We Are Chicago video game.
I remember that, yeah. It's about a minute and 10 seconds ago.
Shut up.
I remember.
Some texts are coming in, which kind of confuse me. You know, why would you make a video game to make money out of Chicago's crime?
Well, he's not glorifying it. He's kind of doing just the opposite. I can't speak for you, but when I first heard about this game, I thought the opposite. I thought it was going to be a Grand Theft Auto type game based here in Chicago.
We totally thought that, and we thought, let's have him on to see his side of it.
Yeah, but as it turns out, he's on to, you know, to thwart it, to try to, you know, take some sort of stand against it, not to glorify it.
And it's $15.
That's the lowest price video game I've ever heard of, by the way.
Ever.
Yeah.
And it's becomes available February 9th for PC, Mac, and Linux. You can also go to wearechicagogame.com. And he mentioned that some of the proceeds are going to two nonprofit groups, All Stars Project of Chicago and Reclaim Our Kids, who have a mission to help curb violence and provide positive creative opportunities to kids living on Chicago's South and West Side. So I don't think he's glorifying what's going on.
He's not.
He's telling the story and giving them a voice.
Right, exactly. I'm just confused on, you know, because of the way, if you're a video game player, you're trained for action. Like part of the fun of any video game is some sort of action. I'm curious as to where exactly the action comes in. You know, I don't know what's happening. It seems more dialogue-based, and that's fine, too, but it seems more like you're going through a storyline, but I don't know where the action jumps into that storyline exactly.
Well, it's funny you say that, because there are a bunch of new Lego City games that are out.
I've seen those.
And I was watching Dylan play one the other night, and I thought it was a Lego movie.
Yeah.
And I said, where is the game part? It's like there are people talking. Not people. They're little Lego creatures. Yeah. Are they creatures? Yeah, figures?
Some are, yeah.
And then it's like you got to go get... I don't even know how he figures out how to do things, but it's like watching a movie where there is dialogue. That's one of the first times I've seen it.
Right.
I know with Grand Theft Auto, the dialogue is like, you know, die, sucker.
Right.
And, you know, I'm going to steal your car and go away.
Yeah.
So it's telling a story. I guess I don't know. You asked him if there's shooting and stuff in there.
He says it's kind of used as like a backdrop, like
yeah.
you're around it. But there's so many games where your goal is, you know, to do horrible things, and the more
right.
things you do, the more points you get. This is not that. This is kind of more of a dialogue-based storyline game.
Well, I think it's a great idea, and I'm going to download it. If you do it now, pre-order the game now at wearechicagogame.com. It's released February 9th. If you do it now, you get 10% off of $15, so $1.50 off. Are you surprised I did the 10%
that quickly? You did that wonderfully.
Thank you very much.
Do you remember a game, we would have been in high school when this game came out, and the game was called Death Race, or maybe it was Death Race 2000, but there was also a movie called that. In Death Race, you had a car, and your goal, there were pedestrians walking around streets, so your goal was to crash into as many of them. You wanted to hit the pedestrians. And then when you hit them, a little, like a crucifix popped up to where they had been.
That sounds familiar.
When you think about it, you go, somebody sold that idea to a video game company, but they made gobs of money on that. And I remember at the places I used to play video games when I was in high school, you couldn't get near the game. People were lined up 3 or 4 deep to play Death Race.
I don't know that I ever played that. I was more into Sonic the Hedgehog.
Oh, yeah.
More colorful games.
Yeah, that was a lot more colorful.
More pleasant ones. I wasn't trying to kill anybody.
No.
I was just collecting stuff.
It's so funny, because after I would play the game, I'd go, whose best interest is that in? It was fun to play. I'm not going to lie to you. I loved playing the game. But then when it was done, I'm like, I don't know. What did I gain from that?
Not as fun as Tapper.
No, nowhere near as fun as Tapper.
I enjoy that.
The game based on Jake Tapper. The news guy.
I'm cool with that. I'm a big fan of Jake Tapper's.
Yeah.
All right. Every other Wednesday, Dr. John Duffy comes in. He is a clinical psychologist, a best-selling author, a life coach, parenting and relationship expert. His book is a number one bestseller, The Available Parent. And he's got a new podcast called Undue Anxiety, which I'm kind of hooked on and I've subscribed to, and it's very interesting. So he'll be coming up after the 11 o'clock news. And speaking of this game, We Are Chicago, and the violence that's in Chicago, we wanted to talk about something a little later on this morning as well, with one of the latest tweets that Donald Trump has put out about, you know, he vows to send in the feds to help Chicago. We can discuss that later on, too,
right,
this morning.
That's all coming up. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Thank you, Steve. Dr. John Duffy is here for his semi-regular visit. Clinical psychologist, author of The Available Parent, and podcaster, Undue Anxiety, which you can find on iTunes, on his website, drjohnduffy.com, and also on WGN+. So, you told me some information in the green room before we came on.
Right.
That we would like to talk about.
Yeah. Yeah. Years ago, there was a young girl in our neighborhood, not far from where Wendy and I lived, that was murdered in a very grisly way with a knife in her home. And about 2 weeks ago or so, there was a report of another similar incident, and just moments ago, I saw a story that said that the police felt like there was nothing to this incident, that it did not happen.
And we're talking about Kelly Joy O'Loughlin.
Correct.
A lot of people heard that story. And now reports last week, this according to CBS, of a home invasion and knife attack on a West Suburban teen girl, prompting police to swarm an Indian Head Park neighborhood, were unfounded, police announced today. Last Wednesday, it has been determined, that the reported home invasion was not a bona fide incident, according to police. Last Wednesday, police said they received a call of a home invasion, 6:45 p.m. from a home on these particular streets. A girl told them an intruder wearing a mask confronted her, cut her on the right arm with a knife. The man supposedly fled. Indian Head Park Police on Tuesday thanked residents for, quote, their input, concern, and understanding. The incident is now classified as cleared slash closed, according to police.
Correct. So one might wonder, you know, like, why would any child go through this and put a community through this and things like that? And the answer, in my experience, is inevitably a belief that they don't bring enough to the table, so they need to kind of create a persona that's sympathetic, that other people are going to kind of reach out to them, and, you know, and they'll be kind of well known, even if it's just for a brief period of time. I was telling Bill a moment ago, I worked with a girl years ago who claimed that her daughter was killed, or her father was killed in the 9/11 incident, and he wasn't. He was fine.
He was still alive. It's not like even he died somewhere and she just...
And she got 2 days where she felt special,
sure,
and important and cared about.
Do you know, there's a documentary, and the title is The Woman Who Wasn't There, and it's about a woman who for years made public appearances talking about what it was like to be at the Twin Towers that day. And she wasn't there.
Right.
It was totally fabricated.
Right.
Part of it was to get attention. Part of it was there was a speaking fee when she'd go somewhere and tell her story about 9/11. But you have to realize, if you're flat out lying or giving an alternate truth, alternate fact, that at some point, if it catches up to you, your credibility is shot forever, isn't it? Can you ever rebound from something like that?
This girl I worked with years ago, she carried a stigma for years and years and years that she's just a liar, and an egregious liar and a dangerous liar. And really deep down, all she wanted was to feel important and like she belonged. But it's really, really hard to shake that image, I think, once you carry it, you know.
Yeah.
And yet I think it becomes habitual with a lot of, not just young people, but older people too. I'm working with a couple of adults who kind of find themselves habitually lying about things of no import, not like what we're talking about now, but things like where they're like, I don't know why I told my wife I stayed at work late. I didn't. And, you know, I just drove around. But it just becomes this habit. And underneath it, I find, is always this belief like, I don't bring enough to the table. I'm really not good enough. So I'm going to have to fabricate something that makes a little more sense and feels a little better as a story to tell.
When you, I don't know if solving it is the right word, but when you confront them with that and say, how about this? Couldn't it be that? Do they usually recognize that, or do they say, oh no, that has nothing to do with it?
Typically there is enormous resistance. There's a real attachment to lies, especially big ones, because this becomes the identity. You know what I mean? And the real identity isn't good enough, so you want to hold on to the false identity, you know. So I run into this an awful lot, and you know, the luxury of a therapy room is you can give somebody permission to let that go.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you know what, this is your one opportunity, let it go, let the truth out, and then we can start fresh, you know, and create the identity that you need, that you want to be.
Yeah.
How does that poor child or adult or individual make amends with everyone else, though? It's okay in therapy to talk about it and have this fresh start, but it seems nearly impossible for that to happen in real life.
Nearly impossible. And you almost have to take people one by one and explain to them, you know, like, this is what this was about. It's a wildly humbling experience that most of us never ever go through, but I've worked with a number of kids, and we've worked through that question, and you know, and a Facebook status doesn't do it, and a Twitter tweet doesn't do it. It has to be personal and apologetic, you know, and explanatory to some extent.
John, can you reason with a child and say, just by doing this, by virtue of doing this and lying so blatantly about something, not only are you setting yourself up as untrustable, but it also waters down somebody who's maybe did have a relative in 9/11, or if there's somebody going around saying, yeah, I've got cancer, isn't that terrible? what that does is it waters down people who are really suffering through anything like that.
Yeah, and this isn't always a consideration of kids who are doing this. Their primary consideration is this is an opportunity for me to build myself up, you know. So they have to be reminded, you know, like this has legs. This doesn't just stay with you, you know. So the incident we're talking about today, the 9/11 incident, the incident you're talking about, Bill, all of them have legs and risks affiliated with them. So I have to remind these kids, you know, like, yeah, you can't just do this. This isn't a victimless thing to do. So you've got to come clean.
Yeah.
You know, it's important.
Does this fall under that Munchausen by proxy syndrome where these are parents who say, you know, oh, my child has cancer. They exaggerate an illness and they do this like throughout their lives.
This is one of the most unusual, bizarre psychiatric disorders. But this is a real phenomenon where, yeah, and it's usually moms, but sometimes dads who will create illness in their kids so that they're heroes in the emergency room. It's a lot like that, the same thing. You know, you can imagine that the story's the same. My self-worth isn't good enough. I don't feel good enough about myself, but I can create a circumstance in which I'm a hero.
How do you, as a therapist or as a parent that might be listening right now, try to handle this? Like, for instance, this young girl in Indiana Head Park who said someone, masked man, came in her house and cut her with a knife. As a parent, you have to believe them.
Sure.
But is there some way to say, okay, now let's run through these details again. I'm sorry that this happened to you, but it's important you tell me exactly what happened. I mean, how do you, as a parent, deal with this to make sure it's true?
It's almost a two-step process. First, you kind of get them to the point where they can admit that this isn't true in as safe an environment as you can provide and as non-damning an environment in the immediate run as you can provide. And then on the back end, as kind of damage control, you want your kid to know, you know, you do have everything you need to be successful. You don't need this kind of lie in order to be a whole person. And you've really got to bolster that and create little wins for them going forward, because these are messages to parents that, like, you know, well, okay, my child is clearly suffering something in terms of their self-esteem and they need some kind of help. So you don't want to overshame them. You also don't want to minimize that this is risky, that this you can't continue to do this. This can't happen again.
But how do you even believe them? Like this kid who said, Mom, this is what happened. As a parent, you call the police and you say, oh, my God, my daughter was attacked in our own house.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to call the police. And then how do you figure it all out?
In my experience, most police departments have community policing. And they're trained to some extent in psychology, and they often know exactly what the deal is walking in the door, or very quickly. Yeah. And so they often handle the, you know, like, well, boy, the story really doesn't add up here, you know, so tell me again. And they can gingerly kind of walk that child through without overly shaming him or her, so that the parents are kind of free to do the cleanup work on the back end. But it's often the policing that gets the child to admit the truth.
Wow. All right, let's do this. Let's take a quick break. If you want to jump in on this conversation, easy to do, 312-981-7200. You can call us there or text us there. It's Bill and Wendy along with Dr. John Duffy on WGN.
We're chatting with Dr. John Duffy. He is a clinical psychologist. You can read his book, The Available Parent, and you can go to his website at drjohnduffy.com. There you will find his podcast as well as on WGN+. It's called Undue Anxiety. When John came in, you had mentioned that some breaking news happened.
Right.
Reports last week of a home invasion and knife attack on a West Suburban teen girl in Indian Head Park. Police have announced today were unfounded. They have now deemed the case closed or cleared. We were talking a little about it. Are there some warning signs? Because we were talking off the air a little bit. Every kid is different, and maybe there are some kids that achieve greatness more so than another kid in a family. And living in a shadow of someone can think, oh, I need to get more attention. Are there some signs we can look for? And we parent kids, different kids need different parents, kind of, don't they?
Definitely, definitely. One important thing that we were talking about is you can't parent any two kids the same. A generation ago, I think our parents would have said, well, no, there's an iron fist.
This
and
is how we do it.
And we discipline and we do it, and it's consistent across the board. And that can still be the case. But in terms of the kind of the gentler TLC part of parenting, I think we have to recognize that some kids are exceptionally talented at a really early age and need very little parenting. You can be very hands off. Some kids need to hear what's great about them. They need to hear that they bring everything they need to bring to the table because they don't know it, you
right.
know, and some kids are just kind of like inherently born with either talent or confidence, and they don't need a whole lot of that.
Right.
So as parents, big part of our job is to be aware of the sensibilities of our kids and the needs of our kids and checking in with them pretty frequently, especially if our children are withdrawn. Like if they're super quiet, you know, you don't need to have an hour-long conversation with them. Most of us will never have that with our kids, or if we get them in the car for an hour, we might get that on occasion. But just a moment, just checking in, you know, hey, are you good? You know, you're awesome. And this is your thing, or this is what I picture for you. Or, you know, you're one of the kindest kids I know, even mm-hmm. if it's something esoteric like that, mm-hmm. that can carry them a long, long ways. But if they don't know that they carry strengths, then stuff like this can happen where they manufacture something, you know, and if you can imagine in the head of that child, they don't feel better about themselves. They feel worse, you know, because they're keenly aware I'm making this up. And so, you know, what I bring to the table really isn't sufficient.
Since we're talking about kids needing attention, I'm going to warn you right now, this is a most unpleasant story, but there's a trend developing right now. It just happened again in Florida. A 14-year-old girl who killed herself, which is tragic enough, but felt the need to do it online, to mm-hmm. have it live streamed while she did it. I read a story about a girl a couple of weeks ago who did this same thing, and it's happening more and more often.
It is.
So what's behind this? I mean, I guess the obvious is, again, it's a cry for attention, but the end result is these kids don't live to see the attention. So
no.
What are they gaining out of this?
Right. There's the fallacy of it is, you know, you don't live to see the attention. But when I work with a kid who is acutely suicidal and really thinking about taking his or her life, that's the thing they want to know is, like, who's going to show up for me? Who's going to care? Next week, a year from now, will there be ribbons around the trees? Will nobody care? You know, and a lot of these kids firmly believe, even my parents, they're not going to care. They're going to move on. They'll be fine. And, you know, and it often takes kind of this army of family members and friends to let them know, no, we really do value you and we really do care about you. And this, right, this online Facebook Live suicide stuff, which is happening lately, is incredibly disturbing. But it's kind of just the absurd end of what kids have been doing for a very long time.
Yeah.
You know, it's just this ability for more people to be kind of exposed and in their minds to kind of ignore them, you know, and that's the fear, and that's what they're trolling for is, you know, will anybody care? And you're right. It, you know, when you become suicidal, you lose your compass of reason to a great
sure.
extent, you know, and you really think, like, you know, I'm going to have some view into, you know, who shows up. And if there's a line around the block, I'll feel good about that,
yeah.
you know, not recognizing how permanent.
Yeah.
The solution is, right?
This is a tough question for you to answer, but with this poor 14-year-old girl, do you feel like at the very last second, maybe she's like, I don't want to go through with this, like the thought going through their head at the last second, but it's too late?
You know, when you sit across from a teenager who is suicidal, the first thing you recognize is this kid doesn't want to die. You know, this kid wants to be attended to. This kid wants to be cared for and know that they're valued. That's the main thing. And they want to value themselves. And just the depressive pain and the weight of that is what draws them toward a suicidal gesture. So yeah, I can imagine. There was a young man in my hometown years ago who attempted suicide, turning the car on in the garage, and his body was found outside the garage, meaning
he tried to get out. Yeah.
Exactly.
How is this either the same or different from all the stories we've heard about people who sadly, you know, will go in and shoot up a school or a theater or a park, and they say to themselves, I've never really gotten much attention, but with this, I'm going out in a blaze of glory. People will remember me. Is it the same kind of thought process for somebody who's killing themselves online?
So much so, Bill. You know, that idea that people will remember me, right? You know, that somehow I'll be etched in granite after this moment, and I'll be important, even if it's infamously important.
Yeah.
You know, when you get desperate, you'll take that, you know? So absolutely, I think some of the same themes play out in all of these episodes where it's like, you know, this need to feel like they belong, like they're important, and they carry some worth, even if it's entirely negative, you know?
I get angry when we talk about something like this, where we try to make our kids feel like they're worthy and they do bring something to the table. There are always people that are like, oh, toughen up. You're the parent. You know, if a kid does go and shoot up a school, it's the parent's fault.
Right.
I can't help but feel sorry for the parent of that child that is shocked. There's the Slender Man documentary that's on, I believe, HBO now. And I'm heartbroken for the parents because in a million years, they never thought they'd be sitting there going, my daughter did this.
Right, right. No, and there's also this kind of almost this group effect, right? So there was more than one kid involved in the Slender Man thing. If you think about Columbine, you know, I saw an interview with Sue Klebold, who is Dylan Klebold's mother. And it's just heartbreaking because you can tell this is a lovely woman and a good mother, but somehow the combination of these two guys was incendiary, and she will forever just kind of wonder whether she missed something critical. I don't think it's reasonable to blame parents. I think most of us as parents, the vast, vast majority of us are doing our best. I've yet to meet the parent that meant ill will or for their child to do something terrible. Hasn't happened, you know?
Love your kids. That's all you can do, and try your best. I mean, no one's perfect, and the people who criticize others are certainly not perfect either.
Amen.
Thanks, you, John. So much.
Thank
That's
you, guys.
John Duffy. Again, the book is The Available Parent, and listen to his podcast. They're fantastic.
It's awesome.
We appreciate you being here. We'll take a quick break, and then some news, and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Thanks, Kim. And again, a happy anniversary to Kim and her husband.
Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
I knew you were going to do that.
All right. There has been some talk, not just in the last 24 hours, but of late, about Donald Trump, who has vowed to send feds to our city, to Chicago.
That was the tweet,
right? The
violence
has gotten out of hand, and it's time that the feds are called in. So you and I were talking about this before the show. Even though we're not the biggest Donald Trump fans, there could be something to this. This may not be the worst thing in the world.
Here's the exact quote. On Tuesday night, if Chicago doesn't fix the horrible carnage going on, 228 shootings in 2017 with 42 killings, up 24% from 2016, I will send in the feds. I don't know that I have a problem with that.
I'm trying to figure out what exactly the downside to it is. Now, a friend of mine who discussed this with me a couple of days ago said it's such a black mark on the city because other cities who have gang violence problems are not in the same dire straits to where they're actually considering this sort of behavior that the feds would have to come in and police the area. However, it's a bad situation that just seems to be getting worse and worse and worse. And the black mark is already on our city. Everybody already knows. If you're talking
That's
about violent cities, you're going to mention Chicago. And it's so sad because, I mean, you and I are in the city, in the heart of the city every day, and it doesn't seem that dangerous to me, but I understand that there are areas where it's not
every
the case.
Every minute, it's dangerous.
It's awful. Yeah. I mean, I watch the news every night. I see people who are living in those areas just afraid for their lives, and innocent people are getting, you know, involved. They're getting they're in the crossfire. And something needs to be done. So is there a downside to this? If Trump said today, enough talk, I'm sending the feds in, that's it. Is that the worst thing in the world? What's the bad in that?
I don't see anything. And I'm trying to find out Rahm Emanuel's take on this. Rahm Emanuel should ask the feds to help. I got to find his take on this, and I will look for it. Chicago Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson, I don't know if I was encouraged. I was shocked when they held that press conference saying that, you know, this training video they were using for excessive force was from the 70s. They were saying the police aren't being trained properly. Okay, that press conference was, what, 2 weeks ago?
Yeah.
Has there been anything to help that? I know that they want to hire 1,000 new police officers.
Right.
Obviously, they'll get a new video to train them by. But, you know, that came up. I almost expected things to get better after that, and they didn't.
Well, that was, of their findings, that was the most glaring, was that they said our training process is archaic, and we really need to update that. And without a doubt, they do. There's no question about that. But the streets in various areas of the city are still very, very dangerous places to be. And if it takes calling in, you know, the feds to police the areas a little bit better, I really don't have a hard time with that.
I think I heard a clip somewhere earlier this morning that Rahm said I'm fine with it.
Is
this BJ? Hi.
Yeah. Hi. How are you? I was listening to the news the other last night or the night before. He responded very favorably. He's a very reasonable we are so lucky to have this guy for a mayor. He's got more brains than the other five people put together who ran against him. He's doing everything he can, including appointing Eddie Johnson, who's one of their own. He's a brother.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, and he's a great guy and doing the best he can. What Rahm said was...
Like a fraternal brother.
A fraternal brother.
Of yeah, police. Exactly. Yeah. Police. Okay.
Exactly, yeah. And that's what they wanted, is somebody from, you know, inside. So in any case, he said, send me enough money for more police. We'll put them on every corner,
yeah,
and we'll end this nonsense. But, you know, they got 100,000 gang members out there. Give us gun laws. Give us pass the gun laws that everybody's trying to pass. What do we need automatic weapons for? To go out and shoot a bear? We
All
need
right.
an automatic weapon. You know, they're confiscating as many guns as they can, but for everyone they confiscate, they go to Indiana and buy another one. So, you know, and they have black market guns and whatever. Anyway, to make a long story short, he was very favorable to the man who, president, whose name I can't say out loud.
Oh, okay.
He was, he would welcome it. BJ, thank you so much for
Trump
calling.
Trump has become like Voldemort for some people. It's the name that shall not be said.
And gun laws, and I don't, does he mean bring in the feds, like, to police the area? I don't know if that's what Donald Trump means, or like the federal regulations that, again, I heard on some news show that in New York, you get a gun crime and you're in jail for 3 years.
Here,
it's 1 year.
Yeah.
And the quote was, it's like a revolving door. You know, you go in for the gun, breaking the law with a gun, and you're out, like, just with a turnstile like that.
Right.
So is it federal regulations or is it bringing in?
It's police. It's more police. It's, you know, it. Now, here's the criticism people say in that is that then Chicago is perceived as like a police state. You know, there's other countries where you have armed guards just walking the streets, you know, with rifles at hand, ready to shoot at any moment. And they said, is that what we want our city to be? Honestly, if that's going to help the problem, even though the perception is we look like a police state, if it's saving lives, I don't think the trade-off is that bad. Do you?
I don't know. I don't. Something has to be done. I know that because we have tried, and it's. I can't believe the number of shootings since.
It's abysmal.
I mean, what are we, 25 days into January? I can't even believe it. Liz, what do you think?
Well, I disagree with the other caller. I think Rahm Emanuel is not a great mayor. I think Rahm is all about Rahm. And in terms of centering, you have to think in, as I do agree with the president who shall not be named, his idea, he's all about might is right. And his idea of sending federal aid is having Chicago become a military state. And no, it's not a good thing. I've been to Mexico and I've then on the street when the huge piece of equipment rolls through that has this huge gun on the back of it and there's soldiers on it with machine guns and everything, that's not how Americans are supposed to live our lives. We're supposed to have freedom. All this talk about freedom and liberty, and then you're willing to give all that up because the guns are out of control.
And so what do you think the alternative is, Liz?
We need more gun laws. We need to enforce our current gun laws.
Oh, I agree with that 100%.
Yes, and right. Make it so that there are background checks and everything else. I agree with the whole background checks, that kind of thing. This isn't an overnight throw more might and throw curfews and button everything down so that people can't go from place to place. That's not the answer to the problem. The problem is we've totally messed up the schools on the south side of Chicago. We've totally messed up housing. It's a whole big social issue. It's not something that can anybody, any president or any mayor can wave a magic wand and fix it overnight. It's a systemic problem. I've taught my kids, and my kids are fortunate to be white, privileged, suburban kids, but I've taught them that the cycle is you go to school, you get educated, so you can get a good job, and when you have a good job, you can have a good life. Now, how you define what a good life is, that's up to you, whether it means a big house or travel or more education or a big family, that's up to you. But if you cannot have a good education, you are screwed for the rest of your life, whether it involves your vocabulary, your reading ability, your processing ability. These are all things that happen from the minute a child is born. Wendy, you know this, and Bill, you know this from your own children, that it isn't just what happens within the schools, it happens at home. It's a lifetime of learning and learning how to get along with each other.
And we have opportunities that people in other neighborhoods don't have. You know, our life has been a piece of cake compared to some other people.
Yes, and I'm going to say this. I know a lot of people in Chicago don't like to hear this, but if you live on the South Side, you don't send your kid to a public school. If you can do anything to afford it, you send your kid to a private school.
Don't think they can afford it. There are a lot of people. I can't afford to send my kids to a private school. I mean,
I understand that, but I have the ability to look at schools. I got to pick where I moved to. And one of the big things we chose when we moved to this town that we live in is how are the schools?
Right.
And the schools here are fabulous.
And we are grateful and lucky. Liz, we got to run.
Live in a smaller house so that our kids could have the best opportunity. And that's what America's about.
Thank you so much, Liz. And some people don't have choices as to where they can live. That's the problem.
That is the problem. How many times do you hear people from the more gang-infested areas say, we only have two chances of getting out. It's either sports or it's joining a gang and being involved in drugs. Those are the only two chances we have to succeed, and it doesn't seem it's not fair.
It isn't
just
fair.
That it doesn't seem fair. It isn't fair. All right, let's take a very quick break, and then back to your calls and your texts. There's a chance that Donald Trump will be sending the feds to Chicago. Good thing or bad thing? You tell us why. 312-981-7200, Bill and Wendy, WGN. All right, so here's where we stand. President Donald Trump says now that he is offering to, quote-unquote, send in the feds if Chicago can't reduce its homicide figures. The numbers, as we all know, are abysmal. Makes our city look just awful. So does this make our city look better or worse if the feds come in and are policing the more dangerous areas? You tell us. We're at 312-981-7200.
I just feel we could use some federal help in coming up with a solution to this because we don't seem to be solving the problem.
Right.
I can't believe all the shootings that have happened since the first of the year. It's sickening. Hi, Beverly.
Good morning. It is not a federal troops problem. It starts with the President of the United States. Let me get my thoughts together. It's not a policing problem. It is the lack of proper recreation. But you all hit on it in the past conversation, what those people need. First of all, there is nothing for those young people to do. It's a war zone on the South Side. It's unfair. They've been deprived of proper recreation for the last 20, since Harold Washington left. There's no sports complexes. There's no, there's nothing for them to do. Now, we're not going to talk about education. I'm just going to touch on recreation that the laws provide neighborhoods to have. But because they are poor, the government, the city government, federal government just lets them go, and nobody demands what they're supposed to have. There's nothing, their creative juices are not used, so they're at the lowest form of recreation, and that's killing one another. If they had somewhere where they could go and practice drums, I heard something so awful the other day that Chicago Drum Corps, went to Home Depot and bought plastic drums for a drum class. Nothing that they're giving. Of course, she hit on in areas, Barrington, Wilmette, there's no swimming pools in the hot summer. There's no type of recreation for them. No, nothing. What do you expect them to? They're young people. They need to do. Their creative juices are being used in the lowest form of civilization. The sports complexes, the roller rink. If the federal government is coming, come in those vacant lots and build up a city. Build a city. Make it look like something. It's in different areas. If you're going to spend some money, do something. Put up, do some gardens. It can be solved, but people need money. It's awful.
So you think the money would be better spent, Beverly, if given the option, because money is very, very tight, if given the option, you think it's better to spend the money on roller rinks and basketball courts and that sort of thing than it would be to bring in federal agents to walk the streets with guns?
At this particular time, right now, okay. If Donald Trump wants to bring in the federal government, I said it should have been done a long time ago. I called and said they should be marching.
Yeah,
I don't disagree with that. But however, that the problem is, for every boarded up building, for every vacant lot, look how they're living. Just a tiny few. It's not a lot.
Right. Okay.
And they're ruling by just. What they're doing is underground dirt. Anybody can go out and shoot a gun and shoot somebody. That's nothing.
Yeah.
That uses no mind. Look where they are mentally. The young people in the area that live there that are doing that, and if they're controlling the entire city, and so it's a detective problem.
More than just one problem. Beverly, thank you for your passion on this. We really appreciate you calling. Hopefully things will change.
Yes, he's responsible. Now, we haven't talked about education, yes, but look at the school system. It's deplorable, but it's...
They're all contributing factors, Beverly. There's no question.
They are. Mm-hmm. Beverly, we have to run. We have to hit news, but thank you so much, Beverly, for calling. We appreciate it, and hopefully some of this will be solved someday soon. She hung up on herself. I didn't do it. I just want you to know.
All right.
It's a sad set of affairs, it is, and she sounds very upset about it, and with good reason.
Well, so let's see what happens now. The ball is in Donald Trump's court as to whether or not...
Did you ever think you'd say that?
I did never. No, I did not. But I did. I just said it. So, all right, we'll take a break. News is coming your way, then the Wintrust Business Lunch, and then part two of the show. However, first, some good news.
It's the Bill and Wendy Firehouse Subs lunch break. How would you like a free Firehouse Subs gift card just for you? Be caller number, what do you want?
16.
Got to work a little harder. Caller 16 at 312-981-7200. You'll score a Firehouse Subs gift card. We do this every day. If you don't get a gift card, still go to Firehouse Subs. You can ask for the Bill and Wendy special. You'll get the Make Your Own Sub. That's what's on special this month. Build a medium sub with one of your favorite meats, turkey, ham, roast beef. You can load it with any of the stuff you want, lettuce, tomato, mayo, mustard, pickle spear on the side. Don't forget that. The Make Your Own Sub Bill and Wendy special is only $4.99. Find a Firehouse Sub near you at firehousesubs.com. Firehouse Subs, the hero of all subs. I'm slowing
what
down.
Happened?
I'm waiting to hear who was
caller
number 16.
Caller 16.
All right.
You're just grinding to a halt.
Maureen
of
the
fine
city of Chicago has just scored our Firehouse Subs gift card.
Good for her.
We'll be back to talk to Steve Bertrand in just a second at 720 WGN. Thank you.
To this day, whenever I throw my hat up into the air, I think of Mary Tyler Moore. It happens every single time I do it. We are receiving word that Mary Tyler Moore is in grave condition. Very, very sad news to anybody who's ever seen Mary Tyler Moore on television or in movies. Really one of the most important actresses of our generation when it came to those things. Wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely, 100%.
Such a talented lady. About 4 years ago, you were not at the station yet, but I interviewed... I have in my head a list, a very short list of people that I want so badly to talk to. Dick Van Dyke was at the top of that list. And somehow, through a miracle, I was able to interview Dick Van Dyke. And it was on that day that Mary Tyler Moore went into the hospital for observation. And she really, I don't think, has been seen in public since. That was 4 years ago.
Was that for her brain surgery?
Yeah.
Then? Yeah.
Yeah.
She has had a tough life being a type 1 diabetic. The outlook was not very good for someone of that.
No.
That had that affliction, that disease. And great strides have been made in diabetes treatment. She's 80 years old. She's in grave condition. TMZ is reporting that family members are arriving at the hospital to say goodbye. She's been on a respirator for more than a week, according to some sources, and has been battling diabetes and brain surgery in 2011.
That's so sad. That's just so sad. Of course, we know her primarily for the Dick Van Dyke Show and the Mary Tyler Moore Show. But I urge you to see some of her movies, most notably Ordinary People, because for
one of the
a
best.
Woman,
oh,
seriously.
One of the best.
I'm covered in goosebumps thinking about that.
For a lady who made a career out of being just plain funny, she is not funny in Ordinary People.
Oh, my God, no.
And it's a masterstroke. She's so great in it. And then also watch A Change of Habit, which is one of the worst Elvis Presley movies of all time. It's hysterically bad. She's fine in it, but it's Elvis Presley as a priest trying to decide between a girl that he meets, Mary Tyler Moore, and the church, and it's really...
Where's rock and roll in the picture?
Oh, it finds its way into the story, but it's hysterically bad. The movie's just amazingly bad. That said, I've never seen her in anything that I didn't come away going, I'm glad I saw that. She was fun to watch.
And just gorgeous.
Yeah.
Just a beautiful young Laura Petrie. Yeah. And on the Mary Tyler Moore Show, I know she inspired my cousin Susie. You know how she had the giant M on her wall?
Yeah.
My cousin had a giant S because of that. And a lot of women at that time, I got to get myself an initial.
Would it surprise you if I told you that I had a ceramic letter B in my bedroom at about that same time? A lime green letter B?
Are you being for real?
I did.
Because of that?
My aunt was taking a ceramics class. And she
and
said,
watched Mary Tyler Moore Show.
And she gave every one of us, her nieces and nephews, a ceramic letter just like the Mary Tyler Moore Show. So I had that in my bedroom.
I'll bet you $100 that show inspired her, because really, you went everywhere. And it's funny because those giant initials have made a comeback in the last few years. But you didn't see them anywhere before. She really kind of made that happen.
Her first TV show was a show called Richard Diamond Private Eye. And she was a hit on the show despite the fact that you never saw her. All you saw were her legs. She played a character named Sam, who would answer Richard Diamond's, he was her receptionist, she was his receptionist. So all you saw was her legs and you heard her voice, and people fell in love with her, even though they didn't know what she looked like. It was just that voice and those legs. She got cast on the Dick Van Dyke Show against really what was considered at the time better judgment, because she was considerably younger than Dick Van Dyke, and everybody said, no one's going to believe this. I think he's 11 years older, I think.
I didn't notice a big age difference
at all.
Because he's like young for his age.
Right.
And goofy.
It's the funniest thing. He tells the story about how everybody was so nervous. Oh, I look like an old man and she's a young woman. And he said, we didn't receive a single letter or phone call from anybody who called that into their attention. It was just accepted that Rob and Laura Petrie were a couple.
I didn't see that age difference at all.
No, me neither. But I think it's 11 years. I think he's 91 and she's 80,
right? She's 80. Which, you know, for all her problems she's had, you start thinking 80 is a decent age to make it to.
I guess so. I guess so.
It's still really sad. She was so funny, and you're right, ordinary people.
Man, is she good.
That's some really great acting right there.
She's so cold. I mean, and the script calls for it.
She's a monster.
She's so cold in that movie, and you really lose yourself. You're not watching Laura Petrie Mm-mm. or Mary Richards. You're watching an entirely different animal.
That's a good call. I need to rewatch that movie. It's been a long. When's the last time you saw that movie?
10 years ago, maybe.
Really?
Yeah.
Hi, Sandy.
Hi. Do you remember her in the movie Just Between Friends?
Who's in that with her?
Christine Lottie and I want to say Dan Hansen.
Dan Hampton?
No. You know, I wasn't in that movie, you know.
Not Dan Hampton. I don't think Dan Hampton. He played for the Bears.
Not Hampton. Hansen.
Don Hansen.
Okay, and obviously I have the wrong name.
What goes on in the movie? What happens in there?
She's married to, I think he's an astronomer, and he ends up having an affair, and she's best friends with the girl he has an affair with, and she ends up pregnant.
Oh, all right.
Ted Danson is who you were thinking
right.
of.
Ted Danson. All right.
You're so cute, Sandy. You're like me.
But she's good in it, right?
It's a crazy movie, though, for her.
Yeah.
I didn't see like her playing that role at all.
Also in there, Sam Waterston. Who's a great
actor.
Oh,
I love him. Yeah.
Holly and Sandy strike up an instant friendship. They don't know, however, that they have more in common than they'd like. When tragedy strikes, their relationship is tested.
Hmm. All right, we'll look for that. But you're also a fan, obviously, Sandy, right? How could you not be a fan of Mary Tyler Moore? It's impossible, right?
Oh, it's impossible. It's like she's like a Lily Tomlin. You know, it's just someone that... Whenever you needed a little laugh, you could put on some of her shows, and it always just gave you strength.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Thanks, Sandy.
Same thing with you, though. I wanted to tell you that my mom's been in the hospital for 109 days.
Yeah.
She just got out a week ago today, and every time I was stressed out, I would put your radio show on and would laugh, and I wanted to tell you thank you for that.
Oh, that's Aww. So nice of you. I'm sorry you're going through that, but thank you for the kind words. That's so nice of you. Thanks.
Oh, thank you.
All right.
Thank you, Sandy. We wish her the best.
Can I tell you really quick? I know we have to take a break. There's a story about Mary Tyler Moore about how Carl Reiner said, we cast her because she was so lovable and we thought this would be a nice pairing with her and Dick Van Dyke. But he tells a story about how he and nobody connected with the show understood how good her comic timing was until they did an episode. Remember the episode where she orders something and it ends up being, or Rob orders it, and it's a raft that kind of inflates.
Oh, yeah, in the apartment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the house.
Right.
And he said until that episode, he said, we knew she was good, but we didn't know that she was great until that episode, just her reactions and her timing.
Really funny.
He said, and from then on, the writers went out of their way to write, you know, more depth for her character. You know, she wasn't just there. She had storylines and plot lines. And I get that.
But she inspired so many women because she was the single woman in the Mary Tyler Moore Show, had yeah. great friends.
Yeah.
I loved Rhoda.
Rhoda was great. Phyllis was great.
Phyllis was great.
Yeah. Both getting their own shows because of that one. They spun them both off. All right. So we're talking about Mary Tyler Moore.
In grave
she's
condition.
She's in grave
she
condition right
passed.
Now. Right.
80 years old. I want to say we wish her the best, but I don't know,
yeah, I know
what that will do.
I know. All right. So we'll continue this. If you'd like to jump in with your thoughts, 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. We just received word a short time ago that Mary Tyler Moore, the great Mary Tyler Moore, whose health has been failing for several years, is in grave condition. And we're just kind of reminiscing about her and giving our thoughts. And you can't find bigger fans. I mean, she was just such an amazing lady and actress.
I bet we can't find one person who doesn't have fond thoughts of
her. Right. It's impossible to not like her, right?
David's on the line. Hey, David, how are you?
Wendy, Bill, my pleasure.
Thank you, David. Ours too. Thanks.
So So I was thinking about it, and I thought, do you guys remember when Johnny B was in that movie with her, Brandmeier?
Thanksgiving Day, right?
Isn't that weird?
Yeah. Yeah, he played her son in that. It's a made-for-TV movie, and he played her son. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's just when I thought of her, I was thinking, gosh, I know, you know, you think of so many movies she was in.
Yeah.
But you think of Thanksgiving Day, Dave, really.
Well, Brandmeier, you know.
Yeah.
But he's not really a Chicago guy, but he's kind of a...
He's a Chicago guy. We've adopted him.
Yeah, you made us all crazy.
That's right. Well, thank you, David.
She was in... It was
one of them, the either Mary or Rhoda, had the ETC up on the wall, too, for the et cetera.
Right. I think wasn't that Rhoda who had that in her apartment?
Yeah, and my cousin Susie had that, too.
Wow.
Thank you, David.
I'll tell you a fun Mary Tyler Moore clip to look for. She had a variety show for a while in the 1980s. Didn't last long. I think it was only on for one season. Most of the cast were people that you probably didn't recognize. They were kind of a bunch of new talents that kind of surrounded her. But in the cast, with, like I said, mostly kind of obscure actors who kind of came and went, was Michael Keaton in what wasn't his first TV job, but second or third TV job. He was one of the stable of regulars. And David Letterman was also there.
Really?
And it was primarily a song and dance show. There was some comedy involved as well, but it was a variety show with a lot of singing and dancing.
The Mary Tyler Moore Hour.
That's it, the Mary Tyler Moore Hour. So when Mary Tyler Moore would come on with David Letterman, she would always bring a clip of a scene where David had to sing and dance. And you never saw more disinterest from anybody than David Letterman on stage trying to sing and dance his way through a scene with her. It's always funny.
Dodie Goodman was part
of
that.
Dodie Goodman.
I haven't
thought
of her.
She's the mom from Mary Hartman.
Yeah. Michael Keaton, as you mentioned. Joyce Van Patten.
Mm-hmm. Dick Van Patten's sister, I believe.
That Van Patten family.
There's a lot of Van Pattens.
As you mentioned, David Letterman. Ron Rifkin. I don't know who that is.
You'd recognize him. He was in, remember we talked about When Things Were Rotten?
Oh,
the Dick Gaudier. He was a regular on that. He was the king or prince on that show.
Listen to the star-studded cast that was on the Mary Tyler Moore Hour. Bea Arthur.
Yeah.
Lucille Ball.
Yeah.
Mike Douglas.
Now, these were all one-time guest hosts.
Yes, but still.
Yes.
Bonnie Franklin.
Yeah.
Ken Howard, the late.
Yeah.
Gene Kelly.
Gene Kelly, sure.
Linda Lavin.
They got
the A-listers.
Hal Linden.
Johnny Mathis.
Yeah.
Good God.
Uh-huh.
Paul Williams.
Right.
Are any of these people still alive that I'm reading their names?
The,
all right. Dick Van Dyke, of course.
Yeah.
And Henny Youngman.
I feel like I just fell into my Me TV.
There's a text that I have to read. I shouldn't do it. Just had to throw that women crap in there, huh, Wendy? To a lot of women, she's a loser with no husband or children, not some hero for women. How can somebody say that?
I don't know who would see it that way. You know,
I can't keep it under my hat.
She used to talk about all the time the letters she would get during the first season or two seasons of Mary Tyler Moore from viewers that were mad at her for divorcing Rob Petrie. Like, they didn't understand that this was a different character. They'd watch that first season or two of the Mary Tyler Moore Show and then write a very angry letter saying, you had such a happy marriage when you lived in New Rochelle, and to dump him and move to Minnesota was just awful.
Which is funny because then Lou Grant did that.
I know.
Right? Oh, you're right.
I know.
To a different series and different character with the same name.
Right. Right.
Well, we're saddened to hear this. Mary Tyler Moore in grave condition, according to TMZ. She's been on a respirator for more than a week, and sources claim that family members are arriving at the hospital to say their goodbyes. Really sad. Mary Tyler Moore, 80 years old. Connecticut Hospital.
Mm. All right. We will take a break, and then a lot more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Thank you, Steve. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. The official start to tax season is
happening now.
Us.
Yeah.
God, I just paid my accountant now.
Yeah.
From last year. Sorry for the delay, Ron.
Sometimes it takes a little extra time. It's understood.
I love doing my taxes.
Please tell me you're kidding.
No, I was working on it last night.
You're already doing it.
I'm almost done. Yeah.
You must have money coming back. There's no reason you do it this early. You never refund coming back.
This year I might. I'm not quite there, but I also prepay through the year because of the travel. So I'm not really coming out ahead. But, you know, I just love to see those little numbers click in the
sure.
corner.
Well, it was announced that the IRS is delaying refunds to try to reduce the level of fraudulent claims. So our next guest is an ethical hacker. We'll just call him that. And we'll try to talk about the all the theft and fraudulency that's going on. Jason Glassberg, ethical hacker. How are you, sir?
Oh, I'm very well, thanks. And thanks for having me aboard.
Jason, let's quickly explain that ethical hacker means that you hack, but on the side of good, right? You're doing this to prevent bad hacking.
Well, exactly. And in a way, it's kind of like specialized testing. So what we do is try and pull the tricks that the bad guys would do in order to put up prevents and defenses so companies can avoid being hacked.
Is it getting easier or more difficult for hackers to do what they want to do?
It's getting both easier and more difficult, because while you put up technical barriers to make life more difficult for them, the fact of the matter is that everybody is now doing stuff electronically, and they're doing it with their phones and their tablets and their computers. So while the technical part is becoming more difficult, what we would call the attack area, or the number of people who are using devices and doing transactions electronically, is increasing. So in effect, it's evening out.
It is. All right.
A weird connection in the news. A Chicago man was just sentenced yesterday to 9 months in prison for hacking the electronic accounts of 30 celebrities, stealing private information, including nude videos and photos. And 29-year-old guy had to pay $5,700 in restitution for counseling services.
For one of the actresses.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
So it's weird because you think someone has hacked and you're like, oh, there's no way they're going to get caught. People get caught now, don't they?
Well, they do. They do. And the fact of the matter is that, quite frankly, a lot of these kinds of crimes are more crimes of opportunity being pulled off by amateurs than they are targeted, organized criminals coming from, you know, Eastern Europe. So you really do have a mix. If you're targeted, it's much harder to be caught. It's a lot like car theft. You know, you have two kinds of car thieves. You have the kinds of car thieves that are specifically looking for a specific model car, who are very good at what they do and know exactly how to get that car. And then you have the other kind of car thief who's looking at crimes of opportunity, basically cars with the windows down and the keys in the ignition. And the one thing you want to not be is the person who leaves your car windows down with your keys in the ignition.
Absolutely.
You're an easy mark. That doesn't make sense. Jason Glassberg is our guest, co-founder of Kasaba Security.
If we could just hold on for 1 second, we have to go live to the newsroom and Steve Bertrand.
Yeah, this is news you knew was coming. I'm sorry to say now that ABC has confirmed that Mary Tyler Moore passed away today.
Very sad.
80 years old.
Thank you, Steve. We'll discuss this further later on in the show, I promise.
All right. Sorry, Jason, but we have been, it's a sad day. This Edward Majersik that we speak of, who did this hacking, he orchestrated a phishing scheme, and this is very common. How does this work exactly?
Well, phishing is basically a targeted email scheme where someone sends you an email pretending to be a friend or a bank or a Nairobi prince who's stuck and needs some money. And essentially, they get you to either hand over personal information like your name or your password, or credit card information. In this case, more than likely, they pretended to be some security arm of wherever these photos were stored and said, hey, we had a problem. We need you to come in and reset your password. And they presented a very convincing-looking web page that looked, for all the world, like it was the right place to log into. But it really was a fake web page where they collected your username and password with that information, where it was able to take over your account.
You make me scared because during our lunch break today, I got an email from a credit service, and it's like, oh, your scores have just gone up. Why don't you log in to find out? And I did. How do I know that that's not somebody just getting my login information?
Well, you know, you don't. It's really incumbent upon you as someone receiving this now to do a little background research before you freely give over that kind of personal information. And, you know, either calling the company and saying, hey, did you send me this email, or doing a search with Bing or Google or whatever to see if other people have, you know, gotten these kinds of mails. It's just really part of life today in the digital world. You know, you have to be able to do this kind of background information, because remember, personal information is really amongst the most desirable data a criminal can have, because with that data, they're able to do all sorts of stuff like set up fake identities and open up fake credit cards and really cause a lot of problems. So personal identification, these, you know, usernames, your credentials, your address, is really the currency that the cyber criminals trade in.
Jason, I think I mentioned this to you last time we spoke to you. I've had this happen to me a couple times. Online, I'll get an email from somebody saying that they're my mortgage company or my credit card company, and that there's been activity on my account they're not comfortable with. They want to make sure that I am who I say I am. So please give them my credit card number, my social security number, just to make sure that I'm legit, which is a really brilliant way of turning the tables on the consumer.
Absolutely. And, you know, these folks are they're very clever psychologists. Right, they really understand the way the human psyche works, because you want to protect your data.
Sure.
And this seems like such a good idea. Well, let me verify to them so they know everything's okay. But here's at the end of the day, the bottom line is this: there is really no legitimate financial company, which, whether it's the bank or whether it's the government or the IRS, that would ever legitimately ask for that stuff via an email link. Right?
Yeah.
They may ask you to call a representative. They may ask you to, you know, visit a branch, but nobody is ever really going to ask you that because of these kinds of crimes. And you should almost automatically be suspect if someone just out of the blue asks you for these kinds of credentials
yeah.
or financial information over email. And if you follow that process, you almost never go wrong. I mean, there's absolutely no harm in calling up the institution and say, can I talk to someone? I just got this email.
Yeah. What about when a website tells you that they have a secure server? Don't worry, this is a secure server. There's no such thing, is there?
Well, there is.
If you have that little thing that looks like a lock, isn't that?
Yes.
That's the symbol for it.
And what that's telling you is that the data that you're sending to the server, from your computer to the server, is actually being encrypted or scrambled. So if someone's sitting on that wireless or wired connection, say in a coffee shop or in a Starbucks,
yeah.
they cannot listen and intercept that traffic as it goes through. So it is giving you a level of protection, and it's called, you know, a man-in-the-middle attack, because someone would be sitting in the middle intercepting your traffic. What it doesn't necessarily do is assure you that the server on the other end of the line hasn't been somehow compromised.
So that's the problem.
It gives you a level of assurance, but not 100% assurance. But quite frankly, there's never 100% assurance. You know, there's only varying levels of security.
You know, I pay everything online. I order online. I do everything online, and knock on wood, mm-hmm. nothing has happened. Am I the average person, or most people go through life without getting hacked?
No, I think really, you know, it comes down to just having a modicum of common sense, right? And the normal protections that you would do on in anything having to do with computer work to your favor. You want to run a newer operating system. You don't want to run an operating system that's 10, 12 years old. You want to make sure your browsers are up to date. You want to make sure you're running a virus protector.
And that you have to update, people. You can't just install it once.
Right, and you should set it to have it automatically
yes.
up, so it knows in the background. But, you know, a couple of other things that make a lot of sense is to use a credit card as opposed to an ATM card, because a credit card affords you certain protections against fraud that an ATM card doesn't give you. And so if you do notice a problem, you have a lot more recourse with your credit card company. The other couple of things we've noticed that can increase your level of security is to dedicate a credit card for these kinds of online purchases. I mean, many times people run into trouble because they use one credit card for everything, and it's kind of hard to pick out the online charges from the regular gas station charges. And so if you're using just one credit card, you know exactly where you spent the money because you've done that online.
And it decreases your liability. If somebody hacks into your account and you only have $500
exactly.
in your account, that's your worst-case scenario, right?
Exactly. You know, and the one thing we've been seeing lately, which really makes a lot of sense, is you may have noticed that there have been a recent surge in some very cheap computers. We're talking sub-$200 Chromebooks
yeah.
and Windows 10 kind of laptops. And so we've been recommending that folks buy one of these. If you're going to be doing a lot of online purchases, just dedicate that machine for these kinds of online transactions. Don't do anything else with it. Don't play games. Don't use it for emails or downloading files. And that way you can be relatively assured you've got a very clean, unhacked machine that really serves one purpose, which is to do these kinds of transactions.
All right. We are talking to Jason Glassberg, co-founder of Kasaba Security. You can go to kasaba.com. We are going to get into the tax season and what we can do to protect ourselves. And any questions, we're here for you. 312-981-7200. It's Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. It's Bill and Wendy at 720 WGN. We are talking with an ethical hacker, a guy who hacks to help us. He does it for good, not for evil. His name is Jason Glassberg, co-founder of Kasaba Security. You can go to kasaba.com. Now, we mentioned Monday was the official start of the 2017 tax season. The IRS has announced it's delaying refunds to try to reduce the level of fraudulent claims. Does identity theft go up during tax time?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is kind of the high season for identity theft, this and the holiday season. And if you think about it, it makes a lot of sense because your tax information contains absolutely everything an identity theft could possibly want in order to do, you know, bad things and create false credit card accounts and bank accounts and all sorts of stuff. So for that reason, you know, people really need to keep an eye out and be pretty vigilant during this time of year.
If you have your own CPA, a guy you can trust, they file it electronically for you. That's all on the up and up, the electronic filing, correct?
Yes, absolutely. And the government is taking great pains to make sure that that part of the transfer process is a very safe and very secure. Where people tend to run into problems, though, is that they may not actually be sitting down with their accountant. They could, in fact, be working with their accountant over email and blithely send your tax documents over email to your accountant. And, of course, there could be problems with that because someone could get access to your email and someone could potentially download the files that you're sending.
I think I do that every year.
Do you? Yeah.
Well, you should stop.
Yes, okay.
And what you should do is you should, before you actually send those files, you should run them through an encryption program. And what an encryption program does is basically scramble them and put a password on them, which makes it so that if someone should get a hold of them, they won't very easily, in fact, in some cases, it's impossible to decrypt them and figure out what those files were. And most modern operating systems have this kind of encryption software built in. There's File Vault in iOS. There's
Google Documents.
BitLocker in Windows. Yeah, and you can use other utilities such as 7-Zip in WinRAR. And what you do is you can right-click on the file, and you can say encrypt or password protect. And then with some other method, you obviously don't want to include the password as part of the email, but maybe call the accountant or send a follow-up email and say, hey, I've just sent you this file. It's encrypted. That will afford you an enormous level of protection because even though they may have the file, they won't be able to easily see the contents of the file.
Perfect.
Wendy, can we take a call from Tommy? Because he's asking a question that I think a lot of people have on their minds.
Hey, Tommy, we're talking to Jason Glassberg. You had a question? Tommy?
You have to ask the question out loud. Jason is not able to encrypt your thoughts.
Tommy, can you hear me?
Perfect. I'll ask the question for Tommy, who got shy on us all of a sudden. If there is a scammer scamming you by way of email or otherwise on your computer, who best to report that to, Jason?
Well, depending on who it is, you can get your local authorities involved. But really, you should get your local authorities involved. You also should get the FBI involved. And in the case of a tax issue, you want to get the IRS involved. The local authorities, of course, because it's local. The FBI, because more times than not, this is either an out-of-state or potentially an international issue. And the IRS will want to know because they immediately have a set of actions that go into place when there's some thought of a violation or an identity theft issue. But it is very important to reach out right away to someone as soon as you suspect some nefarious activity.
You know, I don't know what to do with this, Jason, but this has happened to me a couple of times, including right now on my home computer. All of a sudden, I have a virus on my computer, and the exact same moment that this virus took over my computer, I get this box with a picture of a guy and a phone number saying, if your computer is slow or you suspect you may have a virus, call this number, and it's a national number that you can call, and then they'll fix it for you over the phone. But I know that there are somehow the reason that I have that virus, because it wouldn't just happen on the same exact second. But what now I have their number, what do I do with that?
Exactly. And again, that's something you'll want to report. That is...
Call the police.
A lower-level version of a kind of crime we've been seeing lately called CryptoLocker. And it can be as kind of annoying as what you get with just this message. But in some cases, this attack has gone in and encrypted companies and entire organizations' computer systems, demanding a payment for them to give you the key to unlock the file.
Right.
And it's actually become a very significant problem. It affected a big insurance company down in Southern California. Embarrassingly, it affected a police department in Maine. And you're really kind of caught because, you know, if you pay, you're never really assured that they're not going to do it again or they're ever going to unlock your files.
Right.
And if you don't pay, you've lost everything.
Yeah.
So, you know, in that case, you're kind of in between a rock and a hard place. The recommendation there, though, is to always back up your important files, right? You can never back up your documents too many times. And in fact, this kind of segues into something we'd also recommend with your tax stuff, in that if you're going to submit stuff electronically, if you're going to create spreadsheets or submit pictures of your W-2 and stuff, what you want to do is you want to get them off your machine as soon as you've sent them and encrypted them. And by off your machine, I mean put them on a USB key, delete them from your hard drive, put that US key in your family safe or put it in wherever you keep your safe documents, and just don't keep it on your machine. In the case that you get one of these kinds of viruses or someone gets access to your machine, they won't be able to steal files that aren't out there.
Good idea.
God, I got cleaning up to do on my computer big time. One quick question before we let you go. We were talking about tax time being an uptime for identity theft. Someone wants to know if those refund credit cards are safe.
Yes, they're absolutely safe. You just want to make sure that you're getting them, and the ones you're getting are properly credited. And so one of the ways you know or can be suspicious that your personal information has been mucked with is if for some reason you're getting an excess refund that you think you're entitled to, or you're getting income sources on your W-2 that you never claimed. It may be that someone has gotten advantage of you and taken over your account, and somehow they were looking to intercept the rebate card, but you got it anyway. So if you suspect any kind of foul play, you really do need to report it, because even if they give you extra money, it doesn't mean it's yours to spend.
All right. Well, I've learned an important lesson today. It was Credit Karma that sent me an email saying, you know, your credit rating has gone up. That's all fine and good, but from now on, I am not clicking links on an email. I'm just going to go to the site directly. Is that good advice?
That is very good advice. Or always call. It never hurts to make a phone call.
Excellent.
Jason, great talking with you. We really appreciate it. And again, if you want to know more, the website to visit is Kasaba.com. Jason Glassberg, an ethical hacker for Kasaba Security. Have a great week. Thanks again, Jason.
You too. Thank you, guys.
All right, take care.
We got to talk to him more. I'm serious, because it's like every time you turn around, there's a new way to be hacked.
Right. So true. A break, some news, and then more discussion. If you haven't heard, Mary Tyler Moore passed away just a short time ago. We'll talk more about her if you want to jump in. 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
With a little luck, we can help it out. We can make this whole darn thing work out. With a little luck, we can
The voice
down.
Of an angel. We learned a very short time ago that the great Mary Tyler Moore has passed away at the age of 80. very sad news. Earlier in the day, we were all told that Mary Tyler Moore was in grave condition and that her time was extremely limited.
And her family had gathered,
yes,
so it wasn't
yes,
looking good.
Very, very sad news. She is, as we mentioned earlier, and will continue to mention, a driving force, a major force in television and movies for years and years and years.
And we were talking, of course, about the Dick Van Dyke Show and the Mary Tyler Moore Show, and then a listener called in and said, wasn't she in a movie with Brandmeier? And both you and I at the same time said, Thanksgiving Day.
Yep.
So Jonathan Brandmeier, radio legend, on the line with us. Hey, Johnny.
Oh, boy. First of all, I'm you know, your old man, Wendy's old man, Billy, sent me a text and said, this is the first I'm hearing about this. So you're saying that earlier this morning she goes in, but did they say how she passed away? I have no idea. This is the first I'm hearing about it.
You know, she's been in failing health, Johnny, for the last 4 years, and she really hasn't been in the public eye at all in that time. And there was a lot of speculation of late that she was, you know, in her days were being numbered, and sadly today was the day.
And TMZ actually reported it and said that she was in grave condition.
Yeah.
Her family.
Say something about diabetes. I mean, I know she had always had to have this food on the set. It was, I know that she, you know, I know she suffered from diabetes. I think it was. I'm not sure what it was, but. The funny thing was when I don't know if I was on, but you guys said, and a listener called and said, "Yeah, that's the first thing people are going to think of when Mary Tyler Moore passes away."
Her work with you,
Brandmeier, that I was in a movie with her. But I will tell you something: I'm like kind of shaky. She was really maybe the sweetest, kindest person that you know in that position, as you were saying, Bill. Movies and television, yeah. And you know, and she just was so welcoming. And I remember they put me through the ringer to get this movie, and you know, a lot of people were saying, the network saying, now this guy's never acted before, he's not going to be able to do this, he can't do this, blah, blah, blah. But I went in and I just kept going through the, you know, up the ladder until I got with Mary, and that was it. She said, "Dad, that's my son, that's it."
Wow.
And
wow.
So I go, wow, okay, what? And now, you guys, so zip ahead to the first table read. And for people, you know, everybody knows what a table read is. So the very first time you put the script, you know, up on its feet. And it's in a big, and no one's met anyone other than those auditions.
Yeah.
And so we're all around a big table in Burbank at NBC and Burbank Studios. And Mary comes in, and, you know, you hardly recognize her. You know, she's just low-key, not all made up. And it's just, you know, so we're sitting there. And they go, let's open the script, and she starts reading, and it's her first scene with me. We open it up, and so she reads her line, and then they're silent.
You didn't
nobody
do your line?
Nobody's staring at her?
Nobody's talking.
Oh, no.
They go, Johnny? Johnny? And in my head, I'm going, oh, my God, I'm listening to Mary Tyler Moore talk, and she's talking to me.
Right.
And it was like it just hit me. It cracked up the room, but I swear to God, I did not. I was so, oh, my God, Mary Tyler Moore, she read to me. You know, when you first hear Mary come to life,
yeah.
In, you know, you've seen her on the Dick Van Dyke Show, or the movie, and you go, oh, my God, what?
And
you
there she is.
Oh, it was really something else. It was really something else.
Mary was suffering from a number of health problems. She was a type 1 diabetic and had battled that, as Johnny mentioned, for a while. She underwent brain surgery in 2011. And, Bill, you pointed out that we haven't really seen much of her since then.
Yeah, very, very sad. And, Johnny, I was saying earlier that, of course, we knew her and loved her for the Dick Van Dyke Show and the Mary Tyler Moore Show and Thanksgiving Day. I was going to say that, too. But then she also played such a great dramatic role, not just in Ordinary People. I don't know if you remember, there was a movie called First You Cry, a made-for-TV movie where she played Betty Rollin, a woman suffering cancer. And I remember watching this with my parents and just saying, how can that be the same woman, the same lady who's Laura Petrie and Mary Richards? How can she possibly pull this off? But she did.
Well, listen, well, you brought up Ordinary People. You're right, she did. And Ordinary People, that was amazing because we would be in the press conferences where, you know, she would always say kind things about me to the press. They'd say, well, you know, you're on radio, you've never done it. And she would say, "This, trust me, this guy knows what he's doing." And it would be stuff like that. But when they started to take pictures to go back to Ordinary People, You know, they would go, one guy with the publicist at NBC would go, okay, move him over there. Now, you and Mary go over here. And I would just go, give him the damn camera.
Timothy
because
Hutton, obviously.
People,
did
right?
she? I hope she appreciated that. Did
oh,
she?
Oh, she would just die laughing.
Oh, good.
To get Mary Tyler Moore to laugh, I would go, just give him the camera. Just give him the camera. Give him the camera. In Ordinary People, she played that really harsh, harsh woman.
Sure.
And I got to meet that side of her, too, because there's this beautiful side, as I said. And one more story about this. So we're on the set, and it's me, and I'm going to impress you now, me, Mary Tyler Moore, and Sonny Bono.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
That's a
threesome.
And so we're doing this scene, and it's all these different moves. You know, I don't know moves, marks, this, that. I got to open a door. She takes a knife. She takes a big kitchen knife at me, but it's got to open the door exactly at the moment, and the kitchen knife's going to come after me because I'm just driving her crazy, hard to believe.
Yeah.
And so she goes, and I kept walking in and missing my lines.
Oh.
And so she goes, could you wait? Hold on. Let's take a break. She goes, Johnny, can I talk to you for a second? And so we go off set, outside the door. No one else can hear us. And she says, I don't know what is going on with you right now. I don't know what's happening right now, but get it together.
Wow.
Just like that. And I go, okay. That scared the crap
sure.
out of me. She was right. She suffered. She was a professional. She was right. How could I not get this together? I was just, I don't know. I was doing the show, with the morning show and doing that. I just had that one moment. I just lost where I was, and she did the Ordinary People on me.
You got scolded by Mary Tyler Moore.
Yes, and it was awesome.
Of course.
Johnny B. on the line with us, Jonathan Brandmeier. You had quite a relationship with her on your radio show, too, because, boy, was she a lot of fun with you.
Yeah, she. Oh, man. We had her in the studio. Well, I went to New York to do a show. Live from New York, and she was there. She said, Jimmy Mack was there. He'll tell you, man. She was something. She was something else. Hey, Mary, could you be on my show? What, on a radio show? Sit for an hour? Okay, for you? Yeah.
Aww.
She would write me notes, handwritten notes. She wrote me a beautiful note after the movie. Just really sweet and kind. Honestly, what a beautiful, beautiful woman she was. Honestly, man.
Johnny, there's a joke that she told one night on David Letterman's show, and I can't remember if she also told this story/joke on your show, but we found the clip of it, and this is David was talking to her about what it was like to work with Dick Van Dyke. And I hope you know the story, but we have this clip. Listen to this. This is Mary Tyler Moore on David Letterman.
All right, do you want to tell the joke or not?
All right, sure, I'll tell this joke. It's the time is 1950, and it's an agent's office, and a young man comes in who auditions and is spectacular. He can sing, he can dance, he can do sleight of hand. He plays the piano, he's brilliant. The agent is ecstatic. He says, you are going to be such a big star. What is your name? And he says, Penis Von Lesbian. And the agent says, we're going to have to change that, and I don't know what we're going to come up with, but I think I have it. Dick Van Dyke.
And she did say that on your show as well.
Yeah, she did. That is hilarious. Oh, I forgot about that. That is hilarious, man. And by the way, one more thing.
Yeah.
I just thought, because honestly, this is like the first I'm hearing this, and they say, hey, you know, they just, one person called to remember Thanksgiving Day. God bless you, whoever you were, caller.
Was it Dan or Don? I can't remember.
Thank you, Dan or Don. But when we wrapped, after that yelling at me and Ordinary People that day with the, you know, you better get it together, we wrapped that day, and that scene was our last scene. We wrapped that day. And I started to think, we're going to make it after all. And she laughed again, and that was it.
Oh.
That was it. And we had one of these wacky director man hats. I took his hat off and threw it up in the air. And
A glowing tribute.
That is really funny.
Yeah.
She was sweet, she was funny, she was beautiful, and she really helped the independent career women with Mary Tyler Moore, and really, it's sad to say, Mary Tyler Moore is no longer with us, age of 80.
So sad.
Yeah, you guys, thanks a lot for filling me in. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for being here.
Johnny, you know, we both love you, and we appreciate your input on this. I can't imagine the thrill it must have been to work with Mary Tyler Moore, but you pulled it off, so congrats to you.
It feels great. It feels great to know I did it. Very, very sad. I'm going to get more about this from her. She has some really good friends, too, out there in showbiz. I'm going to find out more, but thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, Johnny. Appreciate it.
Bye, guys.
The great Jonathan Brandmeier talking about his recollections of making a movie with Mary Tyler Moore, the great Mary Tyler Moore.
Boy, he was lucky to make a movie with her.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. All right, we'll take a quick break and then more. If you want to jump in, we would love to hear from you. We've lost one of the greats, one of the giants, Mary Tyler Moore, passing away today at the age of 80. We're at 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
This world is awfully big, girl, this time you're all alone, but it's time you start.
Do you feel carefree when you hear this?
Yes.
Doesn't it, it brings you back to the, you know, the mid-1970s, and it's Saturday night, and you have her on, and you have the Carol Burnett show on the same night, All in the Family also in that lineup for a while on Saturdays. CBS had a powerhouse lineup.
It was pretty great.
Just watching her, she picked up and left for Minneapolis, and she did really well, met a whole bunch of new people, and it was a great TV show.
Great for independent women. Somebody has texted this, and this has got me thinking. 815 says, Dick Van Dyke is over 90. Rhoda has cancer, but Mary Tyler Moore, the first to go, did not see that coming. Sad day.
Yeah, very sad. Very, very sad.
All right, Larry wanted to share a little Mary Tyler Moore moment. Hi, Larry.
Hi. I was working at a hotel in Lake Forest when they were filming Ordinary People. And toward the end of the production, they all came in for brunch, and I was working the omelet station. And I looked up, and there she was walking in front of me, but she was kind of being real discreet and kind of looking straight forward. And I said, would you like an omelet? And she just kind of shook her head and said, okay. And she took another step forward, and I just said, hi, Mayor. And she made this little, like, laugh or giggle or something, and it was just iconic. It was just her so much. It was such a sweet little laugh. And then she kept on. She kind of waved a little bit and kept on walking. And then after it was over, there were fans all over the place, and they had them off in the bar area, and they were kind of preventing them from coming in the dining room.
Yeah.
And the brunch was over, and I went down there, and they all said, oh, did you see her? There was, like, 10 or 12 ladies there. And they all said, did you see her? And I said, yeah, I saw her. And they said, how did she look? And I thought for a second, I said, you know, up close, she didn't look that great. And they all just started howling. Oh, great, great. They thought it was fantastic that once you got up close to her, she was showing her age.
Kind of a rude thing to say, Larry, but I guess.
Well, but I'm telling you, she was like, when she kind of laughed like that, it was really iconic. What a sweet little almost girlish kind of laugh in response to what I had said. And I just wanted to let you know, what a sad day, but boy, what a sweet person.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for sharing that. And you were very lucky that she wasn't rude to you, because you said she didn't really talk to you or anything, and yet you whipped out the, hi, Mayor.
Yeah, and she thought that was funny, but she didn't want to give herself away, so she just kept walking.
I was hoping she would have gotten an omelet, because I wanted to know if she was a Denver girl, ham and cheese only.
Honestly, I think that would have kept her in the line too long, and she was a little afraid of people coming up to her. So that's what I guess, unless she just doesn't like omelets. But
that could be. Thank you, Larry. We appreciate it.
Something really quick. To be on one of the most influential and I think perfect shows on television is one thing, but to be on two of them is very, very rare, both the Dick Van Dyke Show and the Mary Tyler Moore Show. I think if you were drawing up a list of the 10 best sitcoms of all time, you'd almost have to put one or both on that list.
Absolutely.
And it's really hard to pull off a double play combination like she pulled off. Also, she's always recognized as this. If you watch the Mary Tyler Moore Show, you'll notice she's kind of the center of the universe. It's her show, but she surrounded herself with funny people at every turn. The people that she worked with at WTMJ were all very, very funny. And then she'd go home and she had two friends, Rhoda and Phyllis, that were very, very funny. That says a lot about her, how unselfish she was,
yeah,
that she could bring in people that in some cases, were scene stealers and hold her own and be the center of that universe. Dick Van Dyke did it on his show, too.
Yeah, but that makes for a successful show when you surround yourself with talented people.
Right.
Because, you know, look at Seinfeld. Quite honestly, the least funny of the characters.
Yeah, probably right.
I mean, if you're going that route.
So that sets a nice blueprint for shows like that where you go, yeah, the star can be funny, too, but... You know, orbit them
effort.
Around, yeah.
And I pointed out, too, the type 1 diabetes. My dad was a type 1 diabetic, only made it to 46 years old. 80 years old is kind of long for a type 1 diabetic.
Yes, it is.
I just wish we could have had her longer. And real quickly, I know we're running late, but Matt's got to get this out because, Matt, go ahead.
All right. So when I was younger, I always, you know, I never liked going to funerals. All I do was cry, cry, cry. Everybody would cry, cry, cry. And then I saw the Mary Tyler Moore Show episode where she cried whenever she went to when she went to Chuckles the Clown's funeral. I, for the life of me, every time I go to a funeral, I feel really sad, and all of a sudden I remember one funny thing the person did, and I can't stop laughing. And everybody looks at me like I'm the worst person in the world. I'm like, don't you remember the time when I tripped over the ottoman? And I just start cracking up. So Mary Tyler Moore has made it impossible for me to go to a funeral without laughing. You guys have a great day. You guys make me laugh, too.
Oh, thank you,
Matt. We appreciate it.
A little song, a little dance, a little seltzer down your pants. Those were the words from that immortal episode. All right. Very sad news about Mary Tyler Moore. No question about that. We have more show coming up. News is next. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Thank you, Steve. It's Bill F. It's Wendy Snyder at 720 WGN.
There's a story breaking on DNA Info, and I know this is good news for somebody, but I'm not positive who it's good news for. You can now enjoy porn at the local library. Is that good news?
I'm wondering why my 14-year-old keeps going to the library after school.
Yep. Now, keep in mind, the library for many of us was the first place we saw a naked lady, not working at the library, but the National Geographics often featured women from somewhere and they weren't wearing tops. And it was the busiest section. That aisle in our library was always the busiest section of the library, was the National Geographic section.
Yeah, but that was the school library.
Right, right. Not the public library.
No, I mean, the school library, wow, if you could see that. And yeah, I looked at them too, thinking, I'm going to have those someday.
Yep.
And then going to the big library to think what you could have. Oh, the choices.
Right, right.
Why is the library allowing you to look at porn?
Well, here's the story. It's in DNA Info right now. It's just breaking a very short time ago. Karen Hansen went to the Harold Washington Library last week to fill out forms for her mother's nursing home, but the man on the computer next to her was there enjoying pornography. I'm not talking soft focus 1970 softcore porn here, Hansen said. We're talking very explicit. Now, this has been an ongoing battle for a long time for people who say... the library has the internet. The internet is free speech. If I want to go to the library and exercise my free speech, I can.
You can exercise a lot of things at the library now.
Yes. The man wasn't wearing headphones.
Oh, I thought you were going to say he wasn't wearing pants.
No, he had pants on.
Because that would really bother me.
That's too much. That's when you've crossed the line. Please, no talking at the library, and for heaven's sakes, put your pants on. The man wasn't wearing headphones or using a privacy screen filter.
Well, that doesn't seem right. So just bad porno music was blasting out of the speakers?
He was recording...
Did you have sex with Benny Hill when you were growing up?
No.
That's what that
when
saw.
Then?
That's...
That was the worst porn music I've ever heard.
He
it's
was
too fast.
I like it fast.
It's in the middle of the film.
Evidently.
right. I don't have time to sit there. Get to the point.
Somebody needs to use the computer.
Come on. He was also, now this is the part I find all of it problematic, but listen to this part. He was recording the porn with his phone.
Well, why doesn't he just watch it on his phone?
Eliminate the middleman. I don't understand that.
Some guys like middlemen.
That was the name of the movie he was watching.
Oh, my God.
He was... He was recording the porn with his phone. Hansen found a security guard standing just 15 feet away from her computer.
And said, wow, I've seen that one 5 times.
But didn't find much help when she told the security guard about her neighbor. He said, yeah, I know, but there's nothing I can do about it. Hansen's awkward first... Hansen's awkward visit highlights a thorny issue for libraries.
Thorny?
Yeah.
Take the T away.
No, thorny with a T. For libraries in the internet era, how to balance guests' First Amendment freedoms while still maintaining public decency. At the Harold Washington Library, located 400 South State, for all you pervs out there.
Get your library card.
Right, get your library card. That conflict is pretty apparent. Up here in this branch, there is porn 24/7, said one librarian, quietly, I'm guessing, who asked not to be named.
But listen, you can put filters on things.
Right.
At right. home for your kids. Why can't the library do well, it for that?
That's the issue that's at stake here, is they're saying, should the library have the right to censor us? If it's free speech and the internet is free speech, why can't we go into a publicly funded building, the library, and look at what we want?
Well, because...
Because?
It's porn.
Right.
At least have us a back room with a curtain divider with computers there.
See, now that's an interesting idea, but then you've turned it into an adult bookshop.
But it's already being an adult bookshop.
Yeah. It's heading that way, isn't it? What websites library guests can access has been argued in courts for decades, but here in Chicago, the library system has mostly decided to regulate what people can do instead of what they can watch. While libraries lack the purview to purview. While libraries lack the purview to monitor internet content, we reserve the right to intervene when a patron's activities on a library computer or personal device create a disruption that results in complaints from other library patrons. See, I think that's your barometer right there, is if you get one complaint, you have to go up to the person and say, sir, we're getting complaints, sir or madam, we're getting complaints.
Probably, sir.
Probably, I would say 99.8% of the time, sir.
Or at least make them use headphones.
Right. Well, it's not even headphones. Let's say your kid goes to the library, he's working on a school project, and you look
over. That's what they tell me.
That's what you hope is happening. But they look over at what are those things called, carols, those little separate.
Oh, yeah.
Right. So you look over into the carol, and all of a sudden you're seeing this. That's not good.
Well, that's Mike's point exactly. Mike, you are calling in with a great point. Go ahead.
Yeah, that was my point exactly. If the gentleman, or I was going to use that word loosely, is observing porn in a library, which is a public space.
Yeah.
But what if a minor walks past and sees something different?
Oh, your phone's breaking up, Mike.
In the law. So doesn't that supersede freedom of speech?
Right, because they're underage and is porn illegal?
Well, simple fix. If there's a minor within 30 feet of the computer, the librarian should be calling the police and pressing charges. End of story.
Like it.
What about Wendy's idea of a separate room, a perv room there in the library? What
with
do you think?
A curtain, of course.
I don't like Wendy.
Oh.
So thank you, guys.
All right.
Well, Mike, don't hang
You're
up.
Welcome.
You baby.
He just doesn't like you.
That's fine. But he doesn't have to be so abrupt about it. You know how I like to win people over if they don't like me.
I've seen you do that. I've seen you do that many times.
Kevin, give Mike my home number. I'll be friends
with
him
by the end of
the day. I'll meet him at the library.
You look different in person.
Just so you know, when I screened that call, he didn't include that part.
He didn't say that part?
I don't care. Right. No, I bet he did, and that's why you put him through.
I don't like Wendy either. I'm just kidding. I love you, Wendy. You're great.
We should have given him one of your T-shirts.
Oh, see? Why'd you? He can't hang up.
Call back if you want one of Wendy's T-shirts.
Well, no,
T-shirt.
He blew it now.
Too late. Well, that's at the library. Internet guidelines are posted throughout the Harold Washington Library, Wendy, and guests see them when they log on to one of the computers at the on the library's third floor. The computers aren't walled off. I think that would be part of the thing is you do a separate area, but then that area would just, it would be like a XXX bookstore, wouldn't it?
And it would be the most crowded part of the library.
By far. But each one comes with a privacy screen filter that blacks out monitors from a distance. How do they do that?
There's some screen protector. So, you know, like the old TVs where you couldn't see them from a certain angle. You have to be right on top of it. I don't mean on top of it.
I can imagine. So what about a kind of device where, you know, when you go in for your driver's test and you have to lean in and only your eyes go into it?
That's what a peep show is.
Is it?
I think.
Is it really? I didn't know that.
Don't you look into a little machine and there's a peep show going on?
I think in the 1930s, I think it ran that way. I don't know if it still does. There's been so many advancements in the peep show industry. Who can keep track?
Do they still call them peep shows?
Yeah. Yeah.
We have people who want to comment on this. Can we
all right.
take a break? And...
Yes. What are your thoughts? It's the Dewey Decimal System, not the GUI Decimal System. Give us a call at 312.
Do her decimal
oh,
system.
Oh, come on. Clean it up.
Come on. Yours was worse.
7200.
I don't like Bill.
It's Bill Lundy on WGN.
Woo!
All right. We found a story there on DNAinfo.com. It talks about the problem that they're having at libraries, most notably the Harold Washington Library here in Chicago, over whether or not to allow patrons to view pornography on the computers. People are doing it. So is that within their rights? Is it within the library's rights to stop them? That's what's at odds right here.
All right. Susan witnessed this happening at her library. Hi, Susan.
Hi, Wendy. Hi, Bill. How are you?
Excellent. What'd you see?
This was about 6 months ago, and I was, you know, looking at books, and I turned my head, and there was a man in his postal uniform.
Oh.
He was a mail carrier sitting there looking at porn. And I walked by, and I thought, huh? Then I double-checked myself, and there he was. So I went up to the librarian, and I told the gentleman, I said, you know, there's an adult over there viewing porn, and you have kids running around here.
In a mailman outfit, that's your first thing.
Isn't that a killer?
Mm-hmm.
And the librarian just told me, well, we do try to monitor it, and that was the end of it.
They can't stop it, but they can monitor it.
Well, that's what he said.
Interesting.
So
interesting.
I just thought I would pass that on, and this was I live in Brookfield, in the Brookfield Library.
Oh, no.
So, yes. And I actually posted something online about it, thinking, you know, come on, mister, you're wearing a uniform. Are we paying for you to watch porn?
He was probably finished working, I hope.
Well, I would pray, but
maybe.
Who knows?
Susan, thank you. Do you like Wendy?
I love Wendy.
All right.
In fact, I met Wendy in town when her son was performing by the Village Hall.
Oh.
So, yes. I love Wendy, and I love Bill, too.
Oh, you're very kind. Thank you so
much,
Susan.
Have a great day.
Thanks, Susan. Will you stop it?
Just wanted to make sure.
Somebody wants to know if the gives new meaning to the librarian telling him to keep it down.
Yes, it does.
All right.
Yes, it does.
wondering why he didn't use his own phone if he was taking a picture of the screen.
I don't get that either. I guess it could be a phone that didn't have internet capabilities, but it did have the ability to take photos. But that just puts a new layer of weird on it, doesn't it?
Well, 219 says maybe he had a small data package.
That's
I love
possible.
You, listeners, except for Mike.
Oh.
Rich has to say something, and then we got to go.
All right.
Hi, Rich.
Hey, you guys. GUI decimal system that kills. That kills.
Thank you, Rich. I appreciate it.
I'm loud at that. Wendy, you brought up a thought that I think really has merit. You might not be able to, or not you, but anybody, can't stop the public showing of that because it's free speech. But putting those monitors in a separate room with maybe a beaded curtain or whatever.
And soft music.
Yeah, well, no, not soft music because that, bum, 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 right. But in a separate room, I think that would deter people because once they went, it's like nobody wanted to go into adult bookstores back in the day.
Because you didn't want to be seen coming out.
Yeah.
And nobody wanted to be seen coming out. And I think that would stop people, that would stop at least 50%, if not more. People would not want to be seen coming out. And even if they went, and no pun intended that, and if they went in.
All right, this is getting terrible, Rich. I know you don't mean it to be, but.
No, but if they went in that room, at least that is, nobody else has to see the stuff or even hear it, you know? So it would be a win-win. And I think it would slow down the traffic of all that immeasurably.
I wonder, though, if when libraries ask for more public funding so they could add these rooms, I wonder how seriously they'd be taken.
Well, would that be public funding or pubic funding?
Ah,
all right, Rich.
There it
hang
is.
Up on yourself.
There
Thank
it
you
is.
For calling. Tom's a library trustee. What the heck is going on here? How come we can see porn at the library?
Well, it all depends on the individual library. In our library,
for a long time, we didn't have internet filtering, so anything was available. The whole interweb was available for viewing. And we've just recently put in filtering to limit the sites that people can view, obviously. And it is on a case-by-case basis that if you're doing certain research, you can go to the librarian. If your website comes up that's blocked, if, for instance, if you're researching a medical illness or something like that, that may be questionable or come up against our filtering device, then you go to the librarian and they will allow it and input the code in order to get that website to come up for you to continue your research.
That is a great idea, because really, what's to prevent a kid going to a computer and punching up anything and
want.
Then getting a video of it?
Yep.
Right. Well, again, our library is different than other libraries. We have our children's area on a completely separate floor from the adult area, and our children... In the adult area, children are not allowed unless they're accompanied by an adult.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
That's a good move.
That does help also.
All right. Well, Tom, that's a great system to have in place where it comes up as it will not open. You can check with the librarian and get access to it. Tom, thank you very much for calling.
All right. Let's take a break. We'll find out what Ro and Anna
have
next. What a country, Yakov Smirnov. More after this. Bill and Wendy, WGN.